Cool Vibe 720 WGN. It is live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio High atop Chicagoland. And Dane Neal here with you, along with we've got Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome to the show. Make sure I've got you turned up.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad I can be in the house tonight,
in
as opposed
house.
To, you know, by phone, which is usually how I
You're in the house as opposed
you
to your house. And it is going to be great. Merry Christmas to everybody out there, because it is technically and officially, it is Christmas Eve, and we are going to have a show we're going to be on for Nick and Nick DiGilio. Of course, you know him as a movie buff aficionado, a guy who appreciates the cinematic side of things. And so we're going to try to, as an homage to Nick, and of course, just to kind of, this is the stuff that people are doing. They've got a little bit of extra time over the course of the Christmas holiday, and you get to kind of revisit your opportunity to spend time with some old friends on the movie side. You get to, I think it is one of those things on the holiday side where you have sort of these appointment situations with some of your favorite movies, that whether it's like, okay, let's say on Thanksgiving you eat turkey, maybe you don't eat it all year, then you meet the turkey, you're like, ah, it's good to see you again, old friend.
Well, and this is one of those things where, you know, Christmas is a time to spend it with family, loved ones, etc. And a lot of people have very specific traditions. In my family, a big thing was watching a few specific films. And sometimes with specific members of the family. You know, like, we had our favorite, like Grandma and I, and then, you know, like my uncles,
so
and
like,
I used to watch.
Back off, Uncle Larry.
Yeah, you can't be
Tuesday.
Present for this one. Nah, you get the next one. But no, and of course, I am, like, the family movie nut. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, imagine. That is a shoe that fits, and you might as well wear it. But
yeah.
So your family sees that for you too? So do they, if they're contemplating spending their hard-earned money on a film that's out there, do they make a quick call to a Blake Stubbs and say, like, what's up with that?
Yeah, and I'm one who I try to on, you know, like Facebook and stuff, because that's how a lot of my family who don't live, you know, like in Peoria, where I currently live, stay in touch. I like to post stuff like when I'm seeing something, and if they notice that, they usually engage, like, hey, I need to hear, like, what you think about it. Like, is this something we need to, you know, get a sitter for and, like, go out and see? And I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'll get back with you about that. And usually I do. You know, I try to be very on the ball, make sure that if they're looking for a recommendation or I don't want to say thumbs up, because that's not my catchphrase.
No.
But
Stubbs
I will
up.
Yeah, Stubbs up.
Ticket Stubbs.
Yeah. But I will tell them, yeah, no, you definitely go see this, or no, skip it. Wait for Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Now, also,
you know, too,
is your family, ideally, they know you a little bit, too. So mm-hmm. Let's say they may be into certain, you know, movies, like, let's say, cowboy films or something.
Sure.
They know that Blake maybe doesn't like those that much. And so do they ask you to, like, hey, you know, maybe temper your own, I think, your own thoughts or preferences, right? And say,
yeah,
like, well, we know you don't necessarily like movies with iguanas, but what do you think of this one?
I really got to put this to the test actually this year at Thanksgiving, because we had so many family members all in one place, and we have people who are like living not in the U.S. and they were all like, everybody was back. And so, but I noticed by the time I had finished up Thanksgiving, I had thrown out a recommendation for everybody, like, set to their taste. You know what I mean? Cause like on that side, like, I'm an only child, but like my cousins over there there's like five of them. And so I would, you know, like all under, you know, growing up under one household. And I was like, you know what? Tim would really like this, and Anna would really like this. And I try to make sure that when I know a person, I get a sense of what their taste might be. And so if they're like, hey, what should I see? I'm usually like, well, actually, you need to probably wait about a month, because there's a movie.
This reminds me, either motivational speaker, life coach, maybe a psychic friend, right? Where you're able to go ahead and tailor what it is that you're doing for this person based on what it is that you know that they need.
Exactly.
And I see, okay, as we kind of enter, and this is the perfect day for it, as kind of we try to at least to open our minds to drifting away from material possessions and getting out there and trying to give things of value, maybe thoughtful things or maybe experiences or some other ways to celebrate our appreciation for each other. That's the best give that there could be, is like what Blake gives. He doesn't always give, you know, an appliance or a new car. What he gives is his, you know, thought out recommendation for a movie for you. I think that's great.
Well, and it's also free. I don't have to.
Well, you know, I wasn't going to go there.
I don't have to take a hit for that. No, but I think my cousins know in this case, because we're all around the same age. There's like at least a 4 to 5 year, you know, like we're all peers. So when I tell them something, they know that like I'm being sincere, and I'm like, you know what? Actually, you would really like this, and here's why, but I'm not going to tell you too much. I don't want to spoil it. I want you to, you know, make the effort to get out there and see it. And, yeah, I think that, you know, actually, Christmas Day, you know, come tomorrow, I'm going to see most of these people. And so a couple of them will, I know, will have gone out and seen stuff. So we'll get to have a little bit of a rap session, you know, about like, oh, yeah, like your recommendation was garbage. Or, oh, hey, I really liked it, you know, and I think I'm glad you told me about that.
Okay. So you get that opportunity to meet with family members that maybe you haven't seen in a while. And you get that opportunity to meet with movies you haven't seen in a while, but you know them. You know them. You've known them for years. You see them every year. And here you are back at them. So 312-981-7200. If you have your favorite Christmas movies that you love, that you get a chance to see, you know, it doesn't have to be some of that team photo of the ones that everybody kind of knows and loves. I mean, there's some that are kind of celebrities in the Christmas movie world, and there's some that are sort of those hidden gems. And I think they fall into a few categories, and you can share those with us, and we'll certainly share as many as we can throughout the course of the program. But we were trying to, as we were figuring out, so Christmas movie is sort of the overarching, if we're doing the org chart or kind of that, you know, for like CSI, where it's like that mafia, you know, you got the pictures and then those pieces of string that lead to the other ones, and you've got some, they're all under the Christmas movie thing, but there's different categories.
Certainly.
And we've got one where, let's say for kids, let's say these are movies that maybe adults can enjoy, or you can enjoy with your kids, or maybe you enjoyed as a kid,
right?
But they're really kid movies, you know, whether it's the little elf guy who wants to be a dentist, right?
Of course. Him,
you know, then the
Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer being a big one, like that kind of, you know, and animated, you know, they can be animated, but like they can still be live action, you know. Sure. They don't have to be and weird when you get down into animation, because you've got like the Grinch, which is a hand-drawn cell animation, or you have the stop motion like Rudolph or Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, which kind of scared me when I was a little kid, I'm not gonna lie. I grew to love
toys,
it, but
you're not comfortable with disabilities on the toy side,
and the Burgermeister, man, that guy was he was an interesting cat. Well, say,
you
know, at least.
You see, if you spent more time in Chicago, where we've got a political, I think, vibe that is open to graft, kickback, greed, corruption, you know, Burgermeisters, right?
Yeah,
maybe that would be one of those things. What I always thought was great about that one specifically is the Bumble. You know,
So
and that was like Klondike Cornelius, was that?
UConn Cornelius. Yeah.
Klondike was his cousin.
Yeah, that's his cousin. Yeah.
he's enormous, big as a mountain. He's just fearsome, terrible, and scary. But then after they get to know him, he's just a little taller than everyone else.
After that near death experience of falling off a cliff, I think there's that bond that's formed, and he realized he just needed to chill. No pun intended.
So that one falls firmly into the kid category. Then you've got the adult category, and for those people out there, it's a family show, right? We're not talking about, you know, naked Santas or elves, and there's probably a lot of
that exists out
there for you, sure.
Yeah.
But ones that are maybe more along the lines of there's sort of a family message, or you're at a moral crossroad, or you're trying to understand that, you know, that you've really got to embrace, you know, the good in you, because they usually have these where these people are maybe self-centered or mean, or, you know, kind of the whole Scrooge element, right?
Exactly. But, yeah. And a good time to, you know, bury hatchets and kind of, you know, come together, as opposed to, and you get movies that, you know, the good ones, I should say this, the good ones are the ones that have the wild characters. You know, wild, there's just a nice assortment of people that by the end, if there's a real human story to tell, but, you know, we've laughed, we've cried, there's a hug and a hot cup of cocoa at the end of it. You know, that kind of thing.
And everyone has a new appreciation from that movie that they can kind of take along with them in their everyday lives, incorporate some of it into the way that they handle themselves. And I think we're all better for it. You mentioned the word hatchet, and that's another category. It's the horror movie, right? Krampus was on not too long ago, and the kids love it.
Of course.
You know, because there's, you know, but here's, this is, it's a horror movie, but it isn't kind of your serial slasher situation where you're kind of just, you know, left to hide in the basement, you know, with the chainsaw going above you. So there's kind of a moral to that story, and he's the kind of guy you can reason with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and the thing is, the movie, I mean, Krampus, the film was funny. And
that's
the
other thing. I know you're a historian as well. Was there an ancient story of Krampus, or was this entirely made up?
It's not in our part of the world, but it's basically this, parents used to dress up as this Krampus character and strike fear into the hearts of their children, as opposed to giving them presents. So, and it was just a way to get them to behave.
So instead of, I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus, you'll be like, I saw Santa Claus killing my grandma. grandma.
Yeah, be careful. Otherwise, you know, he's going to get you. That was the whole premise of it. And to be honest with you, the way they handled it with the film, you know, they get a bunch of comedic actors, they bring them all together,
and then
it ends up being this like really entertaining. You know, Adam Scott, David Koechner, like all these people that we like. You know, the audience loves these people, and in the end, it ends up being a pretty entertaining movie. And to be quite honest with you, it was one of those where I was like, I'm really excited for this. I hope it's good. And then it ended up being quite entertaining. You know, I mean, anybody I knew that saw it was like, yeah, no, you were right. Like, that movie's pretty funny. So I was like, good. I'm glad you enjoyed
it. It's one of those movies where I end up asking myself at multiple times throughout watching the film is, how did they get these people to do it? You know, where you're like, what? These are real actors from real... They could have got anybody just to get sure. You know, swallowed up into some sort of, like, demon snowdrift or something. Yeah. But
I'm always curious because the more actors I've spoken to... and because, you know, I don't just review movies, but occasionally I get to have chats or I make an effort to try to meet celebrities, you know, people that I enjoy the work of.
Yeah.
And when you talk to these people, the more and more you realize that, you know, much like you and I are, we have our day jobs and things we go do. Acting is what they do. And if they have a free schedule and a script comes in and it's something that entertains them or strikes their fancy, in the case of something like a Krampus, it's like, you know what? I haven't done a Christmas movie. And by the time my career is over, I'd love to do a Christmas movie. And I don't know that I'll get a more exciting Christmas movie than something like this. And look, we're not out here to make Citizen Kane, although if we do make the Citizen Kane of Christmas movies, that's awesome. I think this could be fun. So when they get to mix what is their day job with something that is enjoyable and kind of lets them spread their wings a little bit and just kind of have fun, they're usually all about that. Because one, if you can get paid to do something that, you know, doesn't feel like work, you're going to do that every day if you can. And that's sort of, you know, how the actor's life works. Because again, they got to work. And that's a lot of people, I think, don't understand that. I think there's a misconception that actors get to just pick whatever they're in. And I hear this occasionally.
Do.
And some do, but not all. And that's the real fortunate ones.
But most don't.
Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage just picks everything.
Picks everything. Yeah. And actually, when my year-end you know, best movie list comes out here later this week, Nick Cage is going to have a film on that list.
Wow.
So, yeah, he knocked one out of the park this year.
Okay. All right. And then the other category, one of the other ones is it a Christmas movie or not? And this is that age-old kind of debate that comes up. And, you know, where you've got a movie where maybe Christmas is happening, you know,
sure.
In the backdrop. Maybe it's that time of year. It's not necessarily a Christmas movie. Maybe it's a, you know, international crime thriller.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Christmas. And then some people just attach it to kind of their thought of like, hey, this is a Christmas movie to me. You know, the Die Hard movies come to mind for one of those.
Sure, certainly. And I think that's Christmas is a very vibrant, you know, through the use of, you know, lighting and color and festive backdrops and everything you can put in scenes and everything. It does lend itself very well to the film medium, especially if, you know, how many people do you know, and this is just sort of a, not a stretch connection, but it's something that kind of illustrates my point. How many people do you know fly into O'Hare, and every year there's that picture that they'll take of the lighted, you know, terminal, you know, the whole walkway, and it's gorgeous every year, and I don't care what phone it's taken on or who takes it, I'm like, ah, what a gorgeous little, you know, I feel it. That's kind of why that, you know, it ends up in film, the Christmas time of year, because it just lends itself to a very, okay, I know where we are. It helps set the setting, and here we go. And some movies just use it for like a scene. You know, I mean, look, you know, most of the Harry Potter films have a Christmas scene in it because it takes place over a school year period. I wouldn't call them Christmas movies. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a quick scene within a bigger picture. But some movies are based all around Christmas, or like Christmas Eve, or the days leading up to Christmas. And look, I think it's safe to say that they are in many ways Christmas films. And there's a couple specific ones, like you mentioned, Die Hard. Like, that's the big debate every year. I'm going to hear this debate every year. To me, it's open and shut. It's a Christmas movie, folks. It's about a guy who has flown across country to see his family for Christmas
there
and
go.
Gets caught up in a plot. And and it's at a Christmas party. And in the end, what does he do? He goes home to his kids for Christmas. Like, that is a Christmas movie.
I mean, it's got the major elements of it. Granted, there isn't a lot of Christmassy stuff that goes on in the middle, you know, with all the international intrigue and then the sort of the gunfights and that. Not in your typical Christmas movies, but the next category is kind of the remakes. And these are movies that have made such a big impact, or maybe been around in our collective conscious for so many decades. And everyone has tried to take sort of a different spin on it, a different stab at it. You know, whether it's in, so Christmas Carol is one of those.
That's a big one.
You've seen it done really well. You've seen it done kind of after school special style.
Yep.
And
you've seen it attempted in some ways. I wouldn't even call it completed renditions. But yeah, I mean, you get things like, you know, the Alistair Sim, you know, Christmas Carol is probably the standout for me. That's the one I try to watch every year, every chance I get. And you'll see that one broadcast. The other is like, you know, the Muppets. Muppets did a great one, a very entertaining one.
We'll talk about it.
And you also have Disney did it with Mickey Mouse and company. I mean, it's, you know, and in the end, if you think about it, it is a story that can be, you know, sent toward all ages.
Yep.
And it's a matter of finding the right tone, right actors, or the right visual storytelling style. And I mean, we've even had Jim Carrey, you know, play Scrooge in a CGI, like motion capture rendition of it that, honestly, it's pretty well executed. I mean, it's a big budget rendition of it, but it is cool.
So when it comes to some of your favorite movies of all time that have been on again and maybe again and done a bunch of different ways, what's your favorite version or rendition of that? And then what kind of movies do you make a point to see throughout the course of the Christmas season? And here we are on Christmas Eve. 312-981-7200. You can text them in. You can certainly call in and talk to us. We'll have Blake Stubbs in studio with us the entire night. So stay tuned for that quick break. We'll be back. It's right here. It's Dane, 720 WGN.
I'm dreaming, dreaming of a white, white Christmas. Yo.
720 WGN, it is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline Studio High atop Chicagoland alongside one of the very best in the business with his hand on the pulse of the movie-watching world, Blockbuster. And happy to have given you that moniker, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, in studio on Christmas Eve, talking Christmas movies. And Blake, we're going to get all through them. And not only do we have the list of the 50 best Christmas movies of all time, and I'll mention one of them right now is number 50. Now, this is one that you think it'd be higher rated, but when you actually get a chance to see it, you realize it's terrible. And 50 is probably about right, is Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah, this is one I remember really liking as a kid.
I know.
And I just tried to revisit it about a year ago. And I was like, this does not, like, what? Why did I enjoy this? And I mean, look, I get it. There, you know, it's a song, but like, I don't want to sing these songs. I don't want to, you know, aside from the Frosty the Snowman song, like, I get it. Like, everybody knows that one.
Sure.
But in the end, like, this is a movie that. And it's really a short. I don't recall it being like a full on, you know, long thing. But if it would have been, I wouldn't have made it, because it just doesn't click anymore.
It makes you. It kind of makes you pause before you go and see other movies that you really enjoyed, because you're thinking to yourself, "Hey, am I gonna like hate?" Because you have these great memories. Where there's been a couple times where there's been movies on, and I want to say, "Like, oh, the kids got to see this. This is gonna be great."
Yeah.
And then you go to show it to them, you're like, "Well, it was cooler back, I guess, when there weren't as many things to look at with your eyes."
Yeah, I get the vibe that it would be one that, you know, if I had kids, I'd be like, "Oh, we gotta get her. We're gonna watch, like, you know, all my favorites from when I was little." And then this one would come on, and I'd be like, "Yeah, sorry about this one, guys."
Yeah,
if you like it, good. You know, I and that's the thing. I don't want people to think that, you know, because I don't like this, that it's bad, or they should feel bad for liking it. Like, that's never what the message I want to convey when I talk about movies. But like, this one does not click for me anymore. Well, that's a flat out, like, you know, dud.
It's the kind of thing where you remember it a little more fondly, because.
Yeah.
You know, at the time when there just wasn't that many Christmas things to watch, and if there was sort of an animated special, I think as a kid, at least for me, and I'm not sure, and maybe Blake, you could add in your thoughts, but for me, anything that was animated was certainly better than almost anything non-animated when you're a kid. If it's a cartoon, it works.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, when I was younger, you watched a lot of this stuff on VHS, and maybe they probably broadcast it on TV, but I remember having, like, videotapes of a lot of the specials we're going to talk about. You know, like we mentioned Rudolph, I had that one on tape. Santa Claus is Coming to so I could just pick what I wanted to watch when I wanted to watch it. But now with, you know, streaming platforms and all this stuff that's getting produced, you know, in mass, basically, for Christmas and for, you know, all the different holidays, whenever we want them. This one definitely just gets tossed by the wayside now. And look, I think that there was a charm to it and a fun character that really connected with little kids. But this one doesn't stand the test of time with me like some of the others do.
Like some of the others
do. Yeah, and I think it's because the others have better music. You know, I think that's what it was. I mean, if you think about it, I think it was the music that really clicked.
Okay. Well, we're going to break them all down. Here's some of the ones. And of course, you can add yours as well. 312-981-7200. From the 262, Christmas Wish, a.k.a. The Great Rupert.
Great Rupert.
Hmm.
I
think I've seen this. This one might be a little fuzzy in my memory, but I seem to recall A Christmas Wish being...
It's yeah, like 262, a little bit north of the border there. That's okay. Something that they're looking for. The 301, Noel. This is from 2004, a really fine Christmas film that is not as well known. You know, and that's great. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And add yours too, 312-981-7200. You can text them in. Certainly we can call and we can kind of go over some of the ones that you know and love. Because we're going to go through some of your favorites,
right.
Obviously. But right. There are some that are kind of under the radar a little bit. Like, Blake, if you had one that we want to kind of just kick it off with that's sort of under the radar, maybe not necessarily one that everybody thinks of,
mm-hmm.
but someone that you really enjoy and you think people would enjoy.
It's very actually high up on this list, and it's one I've mentioned before. I remember mentioning it last year. We were talking about Christmas movies, kind of under the radar, stuff we, you know, would love to recommend that we've seen, but we don't think a lot of people have, and it's Arthur Christmas. And it's an animated film, CGI animated film, but it was made by the studio that I think got behind Wallace and Gromit. So, like, the storytelling
And Arthur was a mouse, right?
No, it's the son of Santa.
Oh, he's
It's his son who's trying to, like, you know, step up.
Okay.
And he has to figure out how he's going to fill dad's shoes. And the movie just has a lot of charm and some cool world building. And it really, the North Pole atmosphere and everything about it just kind of... I went in to see it years ago when it came out, and I was like, I'm going to go see this because I want to review a Christmas movie. Like, that was my whole vibe. And I walked out like, okay, look, I actually saw a really good Christmas movie, and, like, no one else I knew went to see this. But it is very high on this list, and it was very much loved by critics. So Arthur Christmas is a big one for me. I got to push people towards it.
And I'm sure there was an Arthur Christmas also built into the Arthur situation, where it was that guy that was always drunk, Dudley Moore, probably, yeah. In Arthur Christmas. And on the line, we've got Matt in Hammond. Matt, welcome to the show.
Yes, I was thinking about that. They had it on TV just the other night. I was thinking about another one with George Raff and Randolph Scott. They all come back. But this is the other one. It's these three men have a bet, and they take... just bear with me here, okay? They take a wallet and they throw it out into the snow to see who will pick it up. And then eventually they get all the wallets back, and then they go over stories and so forth. But it's just a beautiful... It's with an old lady who was famous during the 20s or the 19th. During the 20s or the 30s or 40s. But it's a beautiful movie. I can't think of the name of it, but maybe some of the people remember it. But it's just a good Christmas movie. It just brings you to the spirit of everything. And then, of course, they wind up all of them going to heaven at the end.
It's got one of those great. Thank you, Matt, for the call. And we're gonna take a look at that over the course of the break. We're gonna get some little intel, some recon on the Randolph Scott thing. Appreciate it. And if you're on hold, 312-981-7200, stay on hold, and we are definitely gonna get to you. WGN, it is Dane here in the Allstate Skyline studio until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio, and riding shotgun with us for the duration of the program, talking your favorite Christmas movies of all times is blockbuster Blake Stubbs. And so we wanted to mention too, 312-981-7200, and everybody is adding in a lot of these different movies that are their old favorites, ones that they know and enjoy. Some are older than others, of course, and some are a little bit more obscure. So we had, let's see, here's one from the 301. Great old made for TV is The American Christmas Carol with Henry Winkler. I think that falls into the whole remake, right? It's a Christmas Carol, but it's more of kind of a sad one. I feel that's had a little bit of an after-school special feel to it.
It
just seemed less, you know, kind of glitzy and more.
Yeah, I was going to say that one's not always high. Yeah, that does. It's one of those that... valiant attempt. we'll give it that distinction.
And then from the 815, Prancer is one.
I remember Prancer from when I was a kid. It was made, I think, in the early 90s or very late 80s.
Highlighting one of the unsung members of the reindeer team.
Yeah.
And 630, best horror Christmas movie is Krampus from Chris and Elk Grove. That is absolutely 100% true from the 630. Beyond Christmas is one that they are mentioning.
Beyond Christmas, I think we're in the realm of what Matt, our caller, was just talking about. There's a movie called Beyond Tomorrow. I think it was also subtitled Beyond Christmas. So they might, if not, it shares a title. There's a different title distinction for this movie. But it was about three ghosts who chuck wallets with $10 in it, and they're trying to help a couple who's still alive.
Who needs $10?
Yeah. And the actress that he was mentioning is Maria Ouspenskaya, who is a Russian actress who is very popular. Most people would know her from The Wolfman. She was Maleva. She was like the woman who explains the lore of the Wolfman, oh. The gypsy woman. But Maria Ouspenskaya, she had a very good career. She actually passed away like 9 years after. I did a little homework in the break.
Wow.
You can tell. But I knew her work because I studied Russian cinema for a while. So,
and you're a big Wolfman fan.
So. A huge Wolfman fan. So absolutely.
Matt and Hammond, congratulations. Randolph Scott, we got a little bit of that. Get out there, check that out. On the line with us. All the way, of course, we reach, and Blake, I know that you know this, 38 mm-hmm. states in Canada at night. It's certainly night right now, and we're reaching one of those states, Iowa. We've got Maggie. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Hello. The movie, my movie is Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Magoo.
I remember rushing home from Brownies to watch it on television.
See?
My first VHS tape was Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol that I bought. And when I got my DVD player, my sister bought me it for Christmas.
I think this falls in another category, Maggie, where you have, you know, characters that you know and love in their normal everyday lives, kind of doing, as Blake had said, kind of going into, you know, making a Christmas version of whatever it is they do. Now, Mr. Magoo, if I remember correctly, he's an older man, right? And he has his bad eyesight.
Right,
bad
he's eyesight. Nearsighted.
Yes. And the comedy in it is, you know, everything goes on around Mr. Magoo. Mr. Magoo just makes everything work. Just for Mr. Magoo, though. I mean, that's kind of the...
I've already seen it twice this year. So, I'm sorry, but I'm 65 years old, and it's Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol.
That's wonderful.
It's my Christmas movie.
Now, that is wonderful. And again, you can hear the deep emotional connection she has to this, that you have to this piece, you know, this particular rendition of A Christmas Carol, and it was something that you saw as a brownie, you know, and again, I mean, I can remember what my first DVD was. It was Reservoir Dogs, but that's beside the point. I think what's important here is that, you know, films and even, you know, shortened animated versions or whatever it is about, you know, our favorite stories or tales, the way it's handled. You know, and when you see it, it can connect with you and stick with you. And now, you know, whether you're 65 years young or, you know, a brownie, it's your favorite. And it's always going to be your favorite. And I think that's important, especially around this time of year. You know, good time to revisit a favorite tradition. And if it's watching that Mr. Magoo's Christmas special, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to watch that just for you this year before the end of Christmas here.
All right.
So thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Merry Christmas, Maggie.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for adding it. All right. Well, see, I think that's pretty good. You got the Mr. Magoo situation.
Yeah.
You know, he was the kind of guy that was out there in the world doing his thing, you know?
Yeah, even though he couldn't really see too far in front of him at all. But yeah, no, that's the thing about Mr. Magoo. When you watch the old cartoons, it was kind of the same joke, but for whatever reason, it worked. And applying it to something like A Christmas Carol, you know, it again, that story is so adaptable. And I think if you just place it in something that, you know, you put a little bit of effort to make sure that you transition it into that world, in the case of this, you know, the established Mr. Magoo world, it can work. And certainly there's characters that you can pull. And trust me, it's why we've seen so many different versions of that story. You know, I don't know that Dickens intended it that way, but, you know, hey, as long as it reaches people, isn't that what matters?
Well, we brought up a couple already, and, you know, we mentioned, you know, Henry Winkler doing his version of it. And then from the 708, my favorite version of A Christmas Carol is live action, the one with Alistair Sims,
yep,
and Patrick Stewart, animated, and, of course, the Mr. Magoo retelling. Haven't seen that one. Okay, now the Jim Carrey movie.
Yes.
So that's another one, too, where Jim Carrey got... Now, do you think, and maybe if you've, you know, heard or talked or had other interviews with some of these people, is it something that's almost like on a bucket list where people want to get in there and they want to do, you know, I want to do A Christmas Carol? You said maybe sometimes people feel like they need to do a Christmas movie, then
sure,
they get, I don't want to say stuck, but they end up doing Krampus, right? Which isn't necessarily for everybody. I think it's pretty fun. But they're thinking like, hey, you know, that would be a great, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge, that would be kind of a plum role to play at some point.
There are certain roles, I think, that are always going to be enticing to actors. And I say that you know, with the utmost reverence. I want people to know that, you know, the people, the actors, as they age, because, you know, they're honing their craft constantly. And it's one of those things where eventually you have to age into the part of Ebenezer Scrooge. Now, in the case of Jim Carrey, it was a motion capture. He played it quite young, actually. I mean, he didn't play the character young. He played it at a younger age than most of the other names that we will list who have played the part. For example, you know, there's been a Michael Caine with the Muppets. There, Patrick Stewart, Alistair Sim. Like, all of these actors were not spring chickens when they played the part. Right. It was something they aged into. You know, much like an actress will play Juliet young and then she'll play the nurse when she's older. Like, but she loves the work and that's why she does it. In the case, I think, with Ebenezer Scrooge is, yeah, I think it's a dream role, much like every British actor wants to play Winston Churchill before they pass. Yeah. You know, like that's kind of the way. It's a big draw. And I think if there's an interesting way of telling the story, the actors are still going to gravitate toward playing that part.
312-981-7200. People are adding in their favorite Christmas movies of all times, the one that they'll see a couple times throughout the course of the holiday, or one that they would recommend to other people. And it doesn't have to be something that everybody knows, but the ones like A Christmas Carol that get made, I think, again and again, and in a bunch of different ways. And people have kind of shown a bunch of different ones that they appreciate. So here's one of them. I love the Arthur Christmas, and this is from the 405 area code.
Two versions. Knew somebody was out there that would love that with Arthur, me.
And again, this is not the Dudley Moore where he was inebriated the entire time. That is also a very good version. Two versions of the Christmas Carol that the favorite, Scrooge with Bill Murray.
Of course.
Which is a totally different kind of spin on it.
Very
Less in the back, you know, might have a little bit more Governor kind of Oliver time period, right? And more modern day. Mm-hmm. And then also the one made for TV with George C. Scott. That was also great
good. Yeah. And I think, again, what you were just asking about, you know, like, do actors really want to play? I think that is the case. I think that, you know, if you ever watch interviews of George C. Scott talking about his performances, he's pretty blunt about what was good, what was bad, what he liked, what he didn't. And he talked about, like, openly that way about other actors and their performances. You know, like, he'd tell you if he thought somebody could do a better job, but yeah, George C. Scott is an incredible Ebenezer Scrooge. Is he my favorite? No, but, you know, I have that nostalgic pull to the Alistair Sim rendition. So that's where I always go. But I do think that, there have been some big actors that have stepped into those big shoes, for sure.
Okay, so, and Merry Christmas back at you, Sue. Of course, she loves the George C. Scott version as well from the 708. We've got a request, and Dan, this is for you as well. Merry Christmas from the Family by Montgomery Gentry, which is, I think it's a country song. So we'll build that into some of the other options as well. And I think about this, that first one, it was a little bit scary for me. You know, Bill Murray, I don't think there was anything too scary about what it is they've done, where he actually had, it was, you know, A Christmas Carol. And you have all of those kind of, you know, messages of, hey, let's be good to people. Let's appreciate people. Don't take people for granted, especially your employees. It's kind of a workplace drama, right?
It's a very big, tough love rendition of A Christmas Carol, because he gets thrown through. He's this insufferable human being that really needs to be put through
a ringer.
They all are, right? And in this case, you know, it is certainly filed in the more adult Christmas movies. I don't readily show that to kids, because kids, you know, when they watch, you know, different versions of A Christmas Carol, they just know Scrooge to be this, you know, this man who is very isolated. And these are big words for kids, but you know what I mean? Like, they definitely separate him from everybody else. And then you see his sort of, even at his age, this coming of age,
right,
where he learns to, you know, appreciate other people.
His fellow man, appreciate the season, appreciate so many different things. And so, but, you know, Bill Murray is always going to bring, even if it is a serious movie, oftentimes there'll be a comedic element built in there. The original, there really wasn't any comedy in it. And I was actually kind of scared, you know, the ghosts, right? But I always wondered, you know, special effects and, you know, CGI and stuff didn't exist at the time, for the most part. But Marley would come in, and he had chains, right? So these were and there was some sort of symbolism to the chains. Like, every time he was a bad guy, it was an extra link or something in the chains. So lots of links. And then he had this thing tied around his head. I guess that was some sort of medicinal wrap.
Right, like he'd had all his teeth pulled in the back of his, a massive toothache type thing.
Yeah, did people really do that? I don't know if we know.
I think that was the normal you know, method to keep the jaw sort of from going all over the place. But yeah, that's, I mean, I wish I was a dentist or I knew one right away. I could ask and be like, why didn't they just wrap their head with a, you know,
I've never seen anyone walk around with that. But then again, those were different times. And maybe that was part of the kind of the torture situation that he found himself in. As well, we are going to get deeper into this list of the top 50 Christmas movies of all time when we come back. And we've got Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in studio, plus your thoughts. And you can call and share them with us. You can certainly text in. We'll read as many as we can, 312-981-7200. It is Dane here, 720 WGN.
Call the turkey, turn the ball game on. It's margaritas when the eggnog's gone.
You ask for it, and you get it. 720 WGN, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane with you, in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs riding shotgun for the duration of the program as we break down here on Christmas Eve some of the favorite Christmas movies of all time, some of the classics, if you will. And, of course, you know, Christmas, it falls, and I don't, you know, I'm not even a meteorologist. I know it's wintertime, and the winter classic is one of those things that's coming up. And so we're going to tease this. This is actually pretty good. You know, we get to give a lot of fun stuff away on the air. And this is one of the best ones. This is one of the best things ever, I think, that we've ever been able to go. It's going to be a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the Boston Bruins in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium this New Year's Day.
That's huge.
That's huge.
That's fun. That is huge. That is fun. I'm a Hawks nut, so, I mean, I'm jealous of whoever wins this. This is great.
And we're going to be giving it away between 2 and 2.30. We're going to give those two tickets away. The only thing is what you've got to do, you've got to, it says, well, leading up to the game, be sure to visit the Blackhawks Hockey House, now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue, just south of the Blackhawks store, filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much more. And there's a NHL Winter Classic Park, a free fan festival, Millennium Park. Enjoy games, food, drinks, meet, and get autographs from the Black Ops. That's coming up December 29th through the 31st. And the pair available, here's the thing, is the winner, you must pick up your tickets at the station. That's here, 303 East Wacker, on either Thursday, 12:27 between 9 a.m. or 5 p.m., or Friday, 12:28 between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. And so you've got to be able to pick up the tickets, and you're going to get an opportunity to see that. And if Blackhawk fans, obviously, were the flagship station, but Blake, these outdoor games,
yeah,
I mean, it's like a true, it's a sporting event. I mean, it is huge.
So I've been to one of these. Now, it wasn't a Winter Classic. It was a Stadium Series game. It was right here in Chicago, Soldier Field, Hawks versus Penguins in a massive blizzard. And yes, it was cold. I know someone listening right now, probably many people listening right now, were also there with me. But it was an experience. It was an experience. I mean, yes, it's outdoor. Yes, but they want to create that sort of outdoor pond hockey feel. And the idea of, you know, sitting there and watching the teams sort of battle the elements sort of adds a new level of grit to the game. The excitement of seeing the Hawks, you know, blow out the Penguins was also pretty cool when I was there. And I hope the same against Boston on New Year's Day. No offense, Bruins fans, but come on, it's a big deal, and I'd love to see the Hawks actually win a Winter Classic.
What Blake meant was no, comma, offense.
Yeah, no, comma, offense greatly intended, Boston. It's a rare experience you get to have as a fan. And I think that if you have a chance to go, you have to take it. That's actually how I ended up at Soldier Field. I bought my tickets 2 days before and thought, oh, whatever, and drove up in a blizzard, sat through a blizzard, drove back downstate in a blizzard. But in the end, it was, you know, and the person I went with, sadly is no longer with us, but what an experience we had. You know, I mean, we talked about that and bragged about that like you would not believe.
So you get a chance to see the beloved Blackhawks in a situation outside in the elements, you know, where hockey started. I'm guessing those mm-hmm. first hockey games yep. that were probably played by cavemen, you know, they didn't have like the the Jurassic Dome or something to play inside. So you get to do that, whether it's Soldier Field, whether it's Wrigley Field, and now at Notre Dame Stadium, where Touchdown Jesus becomes Hat-Trick Jesus.
Right.
And you get that's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a cool and a great venue. I mean, that's the other thing. It's a great venue to go to. And the cool thing is that, you know, we as fans are spoiled, but with the United Center, I think it's a great venue to go to a hockey game. I've seen some of the biggest games, you know, the last 10 years at that venue. I've been there, and it's incredible. But when you get to step out of that comfort zone, and you get to go to a new, brand new, big, open-ended, you know, stadium that is catered to really another sport, but the way they adapt it, It just, again, it's such a unique thing that I highly recommend all fans try to check out if they get the chance.
Well, two fans are going to get to go, and we're going to have tickets for them to see them play at legendary Notre Dame Stadium. So, Dan, how are we going to do? I know we're going to give it away between 2 and 2:30, so you got to stay tuned for that, but you've got a kind of a fun, unique way to identify our winner.
Yeah, well, earlier tonight, in tonight's pregame show before the Hawks took on the Panthers, Chris Bowden and Troy Murray were doing the Who's Gonna Deliver segment, and Troy's pick was Alex DeBrincat, who went on to score, which is irrelevant for the clip I'm gonna play, but they went on to go into cat noises during the segment. So it's when you hear grown men making cat noises, I'll play a clip. It'll be obvious what it is. When you hear that, we'll take the, what do you want to do, the fifth caller?
Sounds fine.
312-981-7200, and you are going to Notre Dame Stadium.
So you're grown men making cat noises in a hockey context. Call in. If you're the fifth caller, you'll have these tickets, and we'll mention again how you're going to get a hold of them. But excited for that. So now, back to the movies, and yeah. We've had a bunch of people adding in on those. Are there any cat-related Christmas movies?
Cat-related Christmas movies?
Christmas movies with cats in them?
Yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there's any that pop out at me. That's so weird. That's such a, like, yeah, of course there are. And then I'm sitting here like, I'm having one of those brain lag moments where I just can't think of any. Somebody's going to send one in right away and be like, come on, Blake, you know this.
What we are getting, and this is something, too, is a bunch of people have texted in with a little bit of background information on the Marley head wrap.
Oh.
You know, what it all means. And apparently, it was a common treatment for the mumps.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I wonder if he died with. I mean, I know he died of like being ill, so that must have been it. He must have had the mumps and keeled over. And
well, so even in the afterlife, he was still susceptible to ailments.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Here is another one, and I think this fits into, but this is sort of a little bit on the periphery, but it fits into sort of the Christmas Carol remake in the way that, and we'll get into your thoughts on what makes a Christmas movie specifically, what kind of elements it has to have. Now, this nobody's named Scrooge, right?
Sure.
And, there's no Bob Cratchit, there's no Tiny Tim, there's none of those things, but it's got your basic person kind of learning the lessons to appreciate those around him.
Yep.
To appreciate the season, to kind of open themselves up to things beyond their own, let's say, material situation, which is kind of a Scrooge element. And then, but this one's got a love story in it. It's, what's it called? Is it Family Man?
The Family Man, yeah, with Nicolas Cage. Yeah, directed by Brett Ratner, also stars Tay Leone and Chicago's own Jeremy Piven.
Man, I really like that movie. First off, for those car fans and on the road, with Dane is 2 p.m. on Saturdays, is the original, the not so improved, the before Nicolas Cage.
Remember? Right.
Had a very nice Ferrari 612 Scaglietti that, from a Ferrari standpoint, sure, is kind of understated, but still really awesome.
Right, exactly.
And then he lost that when he went to go and find love and enrichment with all those kids working at the tire store for the in-laws. But I'm like, if he only could have taken the car with him, I think he had the full package.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a movie that I know charms a lot of people, and rightfully so. It's got good performances, good message, and I think that's kind of where I'm always going to drift when it comes to what is or isn't a Christmas film. It obviously setting is important. If you have Christmas in the film,
so even if they're driving along and you see decorations,
yeah, I don't necessarily jump to conclusions that it's a Christmas movie. If the whole thing takes place around Christmas, if the whole purpose is for a character to embrace some raw, like true uplifting element of Christmas, that being together or getting to one's family, or much like how Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is, like, for me, the quintessential Thanksgiving film. If there's something in there, which is another reason why I always say Die Hard is a Christmas film, yes, it takes place at a Christmas party, and yes, it's around Christmas time, and no, there isn't snow on the ground really until the very end, But the point is, it's about a guy trying to get home to see his kids on Christmas, and it just so happens that where he's at, he's having to adapt to the situation and save his wife, by the way. So family is important in that movie. And much like in Family Man, family is important. So this falls into that sort of, for a lot of people, it can be a gray area about whether or not it's a Christmas movie. But for me, I think it's pretty cut and dry. It has to do with the message, in the end.
And there are some bad Christmas sweaters in there, too, kind of divert from his normal cool wardrobe that he had as well. Now, here's the thing we mentioned about the cat movies with the Christmas.
Yes.
This isn't it. This doesn't necessarily help, but it does fall into the lines of some of the characters that you know and love from their daily lives and their regular scheduled programming, like Mr. Magoo.
Mr. Magoo.
Busy doing his things, not being able to see good in regular, not in Christmas situations, but for Doctor Who fans, and this is from the 779, K9 and Company.
K9 and Company. Yeah. No, and I'm a Whovian. I've been a bad Whovian the last few years, but you know, it's a fan of Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
The big thing with Doctor Who is that they always try to strive to have fun, engaging Christmas specials, but they've also had some characters that are like K9, which is a robotic dog that is sort of gets a big cult following. And so Doctor Who has always been one of those shows that embraces the things the fans enjoy, because at its core, Doctor Who is a show for children, you know, or the child in all of us. And K-9 definitely did get a Christmas sort of plug. Now, I wouldn't put it in the category of, you know, great, you know, retellings of A Christmas Carol or anything like that. But I wouldn't necessarily put it in the as far as Whovian, as a Whovian, you know, not as a film critic, but as a Whovian.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it equates to something like the Star Wars holiday special. At least what I've seen of it. I mean, yeah, it isn't great, but I wouldn't, you know, the Star Wars holiday special goes down as one of, like, the worst of the worst of the worst.
Okay.
You know, change-ups of how to use franchise characters type things.
Yes or no, Doctor Who, long known for his wardrobe, specific wardrobe for the Christmas special, had a scarf, I'm guessing. Was it a festive Christmas holiday scarf?
I mean, for me, it was always a festive scarf. So, yeah, I mean, and that you're talking about Tom Baker, who I believe is the fourth Doctor. Yeah, that was a... So many people I know want to always dress up and be Tom Baker's doctor for Halloween.
312
great character.
981-7200. We are here in studio talking on Christmas Eve some of your greatest and favorite Christmas movies, even if they're a little obscure, maybe off the beaten path, Christmas movies of all times. The ones you don't want to miss, 312-981-7200. You can add them. You can text them in. You can call in. We'll certainly kind of get to the bottom of some of the questions you may have as well with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. In studio and between, and stay tuned for this, between 2 o'clock and 2:30, we're going to give away two tickets to the Winter Classic, Blackhawks versus Bruins at Notre Dame Stadium. And the way that you win those is keep a listen during the postgame show for the Blackhawks. There was a couple guys on there, you know, that you know and love from the postgame show making some cat noises. When you hear those, the fifth caller will win these two tickets. So stay tuned for that.
Because it's Christmas. Yes, it's Christmas. Thank God it's Christmas.
Oh. 720. WGN, it is Christmas Eve here, high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Daniel with you until 5 a.m. In for Nick DiGilio alongside Blockbuster Blake Stubbs as we break down the greatest, your favorite, maybe even some of the ones you don't necessarily like that much, but some notable and memorable Christmas movies of all time. In the last segment, we kind of went through the kind of the different iterations of A Christmas Carol, right? Ones
yeah.
that are... There definitely it's Ebenezer Scrooge or a character just like him in that sort of workplace drama, coming to terms with the consequences of his action and hopefully popping out on the other side a better and, you know, a kinder, gentler human being ready to go out there and make some positive difference in the world.
A learned individual. That would be the hope, that you walk away from it changed in a better way.
And then as we kind of look at this list, and so we're still, we've got the top 50 of all time. We'll hope to get through at least mentioning them till we get to number one. But you've got Mickey's Christmas Carol. That's another one where,
yeah.
you know, you've got one of your characters you know and love kind of in that scenario. And then The Preacher's Wife. And
yeah.
I just saw, you know, Whitney Houston is, you know, of course, tragically lost, you know, far too soon. She had a lot of demons, right? Or a lot of challenges that she had personally with substance abuse and all sorts of things. But you know what? A musical talent, absolutely undeniable for sure. But also
one of a kind, certainly.
She was in some movies, you know,
yeah.
a couple of really great movies that have kind of stood up to the test of time. And this one is one.
This is one in particular. I mean, Denzel Washington, you know, Whitney, the talent level. And then Courtney B. Vance, who is an actor that I absolutely adore. I love watching him on screen. I've seen clips of him, you know, live on stage. He was in Fences opposite James Earl Jones. You can actually watch a couple clips of him at the Tonys from when that production ran. And then, oddly enough, Denzel years later would make Fences and star in Fences on Broadway himself. I think it's one of those movies that I I remember seeing when I was in college. Now, this was still years after it had been released. I mean, this was made in 96. I was in college in the early 2000s. And I remember it was like on Christmas break, and I was just kind of like binging through Christmas movies, and it was on, and I was like, why have I never seen this movie? And I think it's one of those that, you know, you rarely get to get this caliber of talent together for a Christmas film, you know, and usually it's something, a Christmas movie can be built around one talent, but let alone three really good ones. And again, Courtney B. Vance is not the biggest name on here, but he's probably my favorite name on here in this particular case, just because I think he's one of those actors that always transitions well, like within from scene to scene, working with, doesn't matter who he's working with. He makes them look good. He looks good. It's one of the, and this movie has a lot of charm. I mean, you know, the singing performances alone from Whitney obviously are good.
Well, it's,
and the emotional connection is strong in this movie.
It's tough to break in on the music side too, certainly to become, you know, have a Christmas song that's kind of added into the playlist of Christmas songs that people know, right, and love. It's tough, right? You know,
it
you're
is.
Michael Bublé, you're trying to break in there. Yeah, you got one, right? And mm-hmm. then Mariah Carey has been able to do that. A lot of them are standards, right? A lot of them are things that have been around a long time. So it's tough to do. And we're letting people kind of call in with their and text in with their favorites. 312-981-7200 from the 847. The Lemon Drop Kid with Jack Lemmon.
Yeah.
And Bob Hope. Haven't seen it for years, but I would love to. Like, Bob Hope was one of those great entertainers, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember reading, I actually, when I was in high school, I wrote a informative speech about Bob Hope. So it was kind of like a little biographical speech. And the man literally had a joke vault. It was just a room where he had
what?
Jokes upon jokes.
Like,
and it was just, he would just write stuff down and it would just get thrown in the vault. And it wasn't really organized or anything like that. It was just this like, if you wanted to have like a physical representation of what his brain was like, but it was something he just couldn't keep, you know, like locked away, he would just write it down and throw it in this room. And that's where it would be. And even after his passing, they were still finding jokes that like he never told them anywhere, like on TV or at a USO show or anything. But you want to talk about an entertainer. Bob Hope was one of them. And I when I lived out in Palm Springs, you know, I used to call in and talk with you.
Mm-hmm.
I used to drive by his palatial estate that was like on a cliffside regularly. They actually just sold it in the last few years. But yeah, it looked like a spaceship on the side of a mountain. You can Google this house. It's goofy looking. But yeah, Bob Hope used to live out there in the desert. So
wow.
Yeah.
It's when the Wayback Machine, these guys were definitely contemporaries. Humphrey Bogart, Aldo Ray, Peter Houston off the 630 Senate. We Are No Angels, suggesting that as a great Christmas movie.
That was one I think I remember seeing on Turner Classic Movies years ago. Like, my grandma used to watch Turner Classic Movies religiously, and she lost her eyesight later in life, but when she would hear voices, she could still recognize everybody. And I remember her watching several of these films that have been mentioned, you know, Lemon Drop Kid being one of them specifically, but she knew Jack Lemmon's voice instantly, anytime she heard it.
These are two that I think, if you're a little bit younger than maybe, you know, some of the movies that we've shared that are classics that have been around for decades. Now, these are not recent films, but these are ones that, you know, are maybe a little bit closer to now. But I think that they are, I don't know if they're classics yet. They certainly are favorites, and these get brought up all the time. So you've got Home Alone from 1990, you know, and that's Macaulay Culkin and all the hijinks that can get in when you're in an affluent suburb, you've somehow been forgotten behind, and then you're the target for some thieves, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's this movie made so much money.
Right.
Ludicrous sums of money. In fact, I think it was one of the top 10 of all time for quite a while because it made so much money. And it was written, I believe, by John Hughes, but it was directed by Chris Columbus. The big thing for me, you know, when I was a kid was obviously, you know, the imagination behind the booby traps and everything as a young boy. That was pretty cool. I remember seeing that movie in theaters with my parents.
Wow.
And we didn't always go, like, all three of us to the movies. Like, I'd go to movies with mom. I'd go to movies with dad. Sometimes we would see. This was one of, like, the all-time, like, great movie-going experiences because we all laughed. I mean, I was a kid just laughing at all the, you know, the physical comedy. Daniel Stern, when he steps on all those ornaments, that kills me every time. That every time I will laugh at that. And I think that's a good indicator, you know, a little litmus test for you about whether or not the movie's good. It does it. It holds up. You can watch it. You can still laugh. And the thing is, I mean, you don't wish this situation upon anybody in the movie, but like a kid getting left home alone with a big family and, you know, the head count getting messed up and everything. It's a nightmare scenario, but how plausible is it that something of that nature could happen?
I don't know.
Now, granted, in this day and age, I think we could rectify the situation, go get him and get him on a plane and it'd be fine. But,
I think a couple well-placed phone calls to
and you'd
maybe
be fine,
some
yeah.
other relatives.
Or text messages, because you'd be texting your 9-year-old probably being like, you stay right there until the neighbors come and get
you. How do you not note? Granted, there was a lot of people. I mean, they built in sort of that plausible confusion in there, and then you've got the persistence of the two bad guys. I don't know that you'd see that all the time.
No, that's where it goes a little too off the reservation for me. But at the same time, that's where the comedy comes from in the third act.
Greg Cassavetes made just tons and tons of money. It also made Macaulay Culkin a household name, and made him like we know him for this,
right?
To these, no matter what he does or doesn't do ever again.
Yep.
He's been immortalized in the Home Alone films. And then the other one, and this is one that I think people mention all the time as this is one of their absolute favorites, and it's National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. So you got your Clark Griswold. He can go on a number of different vacations.
Yes.
He can go to Europe. He can go to Wally World, and he can also kind of stay home and create an unforgettable Christmas.
Right. I the thing about this movie is I think it's a little too high on this list. It's listed at number 45. I think it, at least on this station, in this part of the country, I think it is a very big favorite. It takes place, they're a Chicagoland family. This is an easily relatable film. It's about a guy who wants to, and again, at this point, you know this character if you've seen any of the other Vacation movies, but Clark Griswold just wants to have a fun old-fashioned family Christmas. He wants to have his parents and his side of the family, his wife's parents and side of the family. He wants them all in the same place, and he wants to have a big Christmas dinner, give gifts to the kids, the whole deal. But obviously things are going to go awry, as is, a normal, realistic. This movie is so relatable is where I'm going with that. It's the most relatable Christmas movie, I think, on this list because, honestly...
If you've ever
had one of those family Christmases, you know they never go smoothly.
They don't go unsmoothly, though.
No, but that's the whole... I mean...
Well, when you're Clark Griswold.
At the same time, what kind of movie would we have if it didn't go this crazy?
You invite your cousin Eddie over, it's going to get crazy. 312-981-7200. You can add in your favorite Christmas movie, whether it's an obscure one that you love and that you think listeners would love to hear about and get a chance to see, or one of those all-time favorites that you know, love, can't miss, have to see a number of times before the end of the season. We've got from the 630, we've got... it looks like The Bishop's Wife with Cary Grant.
Bishop's Wife, that's a classic.
So you got Preacher's Wife, you got Bishop, a little higher up on the food chain. And then also from the 312, let's see, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. We're going to get into some of that stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So we're going to take a break and we come back. 312-981-7200. You can go ahead and add your thoughts in. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in studio all night with me and Stane here on 720 WGN.
All right, who you got to deliver tonight? Got to
go with the cat. We're playing the Panthers.
The cat, you're playing the Cats.
He's got goals in two straight.
Hey, Bulls fans, enter for your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls night experience at chicagotribune.com/Bulls Quiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. 720 WGN, it is Dane here until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio, riding shotgun tonight, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We are breaking down all your favorite Christmas movies in a bunch of different categories, movies that are holiday movies, either obscure ones that you know and love or some of the best and biggest all-time ones. 312-981-7200, people are adding in their thoughts as well. And it is great. So you heard the, and Dan played it. I thought it was a little obscure, but people are definitely paying attention. It's not every day that you have grown men making cat noises on the radio specifically here, but they did it. And the fifth caller is on the line with us now, and we've got her. It is Natalie from Huntley. Natalie, welcome to the show. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So did you hear it right away? Were you listening for the cat noise, or did you happen to stumble upon it and you just called because you got pretty lucky with
it? Yep, that's what happened.
Wow. So have you ever been to one of these outdoor kind of winter classic games? Blake had mentioned it's an unforgettable experience.
No, I've never been.
Okay.
I would suggest bundling up, Natalie. Make sure you're well bundled up. I remember being a giant, multi-layer insulated person, warm and enjoying it. And some people around me were very cold and kind of lamenting that they didn't bundle up more. So that's my advice been. Make sure you're ready for weather.
Actually, what Blake had suggested is that you take him with. You've got two tickets, and
yeah.
And it's important to go with someone who kind of knows, as they say, the lay of the land.
As a veteran of this experience,
yeah.
I'd like to offer my services as a person who can sit next to you and kind of enjoy it at the same time.
As a guy. So who are you? Do you know who you're going to take with, or are you going to just kind of maybe run your own
contest? Yeah, I'm going to take my... I'm going to take my husband.
All right. All right. Well, stay on hold, and Dan's going to get you all the information. You got to be able to pick the tickets up here. Congratulations. Thanks for listening. Before we let you go, what's your favorite Christmas movie?
Probably Griswold's Christmas Vacation.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
You're not alone. Thanks, Natalie. All right. Wow. So that's it. That's exciting. I think we're going to be in. We're going to give a couple of those tickets away throughout the course of the week as well. So it's
nice.
It's a big outlet. So what is it like? Because it's one thing, the kind of that intimate setting of, you know, of the stadium and the national anthem and it rocking, and then you're in this open air situation, just a huge crowd.
Yeah.
And it's just a different vibe, right?
I think that in the case of being in an arena to watch a hockey game, you know, noise, you know, the United Center is known as one of the loudest arenas, if not the loudest arena in all of hockey. But when you're at a open stadium, you know, the noise just goes up. And so if you can imagine, if you've ever been to a live football game, okay, the noise element of it is quite different than when you're inside of an arena. You get that feeling at a hockey game, but you know, when they put the ice on there, you kind of realize that the ice surface is a lot smaller than a football field. So you do have a bit of a distance factor from the game. I don't think it takes anything away from watching the game. I think it's just something that people don't expect. So if you're going to this and you've never been, know that it is going to be different, but you'll adjust very quickly. And usually the Jumbotron comes in handy, especially on those the scrums and the boards that you can't see and things like that, because, you know, viewing angles are always important in sports, and everybody wants to, like, be as close as they can. Stadium games don't afford you that same luxury that you can get if you were down on the glass. So you all get to experience it kind of the same way, which is nice. And yeah, you're going to make friends if you're sitting up there. I mean, even if they're cheering for the other team, it can be because this is like a special
event.
Everyone
understands that this is a unique experience, and that everyone's just kind of enjoying the fact that they are there, sports related. Olive branches being extended at all times in places, and a lot of these are in football stadiums. And this is the first year in a long time that that fans of the Chicago Bears have been able to see football in a football stadium that has been not only really entertaining. I mean, the team is fun to watch.
They are.
Also, the scoreboard is also more pleasant to look at as well, typically. And again, like this week, you know, I mean, they won again. I mean, this is a special team for the Bears.
I think that as my family's biggest Blackhawks fan, I know my dad is our family's biggest Bears fan. He's having a good year, to say the least. And again, a lot of that has to do with they made good pickups, you know, good coaching. The team, they're clicking. There's an atmosphere amongst this team, and we're getting to see it thanks to social media and everything after these wins, where it is much akin to the Cubs, you know, when they went all the way. So I want that momentum, that feel, that vibe. Like, that makes me as a fan get real jazzed to watch this team week in, week out. And I think that, you know, today was like the cleanest, best game? No, but at the same time, they won. Hey, we got another W, the team got another W. I'm not on the team, but I wish I was on the team.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. My playing days are over.
Because of the knee.
Because of the knee. Yeah, both knees. Actually, all of my knees. They're just awful. But no, I think that you hit it on the head, though. This is an exciting team to watch. Yeah. But I think when we get down deeper into what makes these teams click, like, I'm fascinated now by, like, sports psychology. You know, like, what is it that makes teams, certain teams, you know, like, maybe it's the same guys or gals. Like, one year they're great and the next they're not. It's got to be the psychology, right?
You bring up the Cub reference, and I know off the air we talked a little bit before the program about where you can just, it comes from the top, and I think the coach can set a tone for a lot of different things. But, you know, he's got kind of he's a new coach, and so there's not a ton of experience with the head coaching side. Certainly had a lot of success as a coordinator, but just the whole vibe, the mindset of the team, just the attitude of the team is totally different. And you look at it, and you're only interchanging a few different players. Granted, they got some receivers. They've just really, I think, had a lot of things. And you mentioned the word click kind of kick in. And then you get Khalil Mack on the defensive side.
Yeah.
And he's one of those very rare players that that just makes everybody else better. Because
just brings it. Every element of it, yeah.
You have to spend so much time worrying about what he's doing that you can't adequately worry about everything else.
Right.
And it just makes opportunities for everybody else to get in there. Now, they had a good running game last year, and you knew, or at least you hoped, that Trubisky had the potential to be one of those quarterbacks that could reach a point where he was
sure.
special, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it's so crazy, right? It's this, and I think that they've got sort of that, after a couple of these wins against some of the best competition in football, that they have this, they believe they can do it kind of attitude.
Right.
And if you've got a defense that can stop, let's say, the Rams from scoring at all, I mean, you can't lose by much if they don't score at all.
Right.
Or they score very little. So they've got, I don't know, they've got kind of, you've got this weird mojo, right? This vibe. Dan, what do you think? I know that you work on a lot of the sports stuff that we do, and a lot of those conversations are happening with you in the booth. There's something sort of in like this weird, crazy vibe where you feel like they could go to the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, it's a real likable group, as you guys just talked about, and it's one of those years where you kind of get a couple breaks here or there, and one game turns one way, and they're winning different types of games. Like maybe the defense not as sharp. They were missing Eddie Jackson today. Mack, who's obviously one of the cornerstones, missed two games. Or maybe for some reason the offense isn't clicking. There's Mitch not accurate, but then the defense picks them up. So both Nagy and Trubisky talked about this postgame today. That type of experience will help you in a playoff run.
And you're seeing them play, certainly they've lost some games where you'd think on paper the competition shouldn't be that tough, they should win. But, it's the NFL, everybody gets paid, and these are all great players. But I don't think they need to have some sort of Cinderella situation in order to do it. I think if they just get out there and play their game, like, why wouldn't they win? Especially if they can lock up something. And what you've seen is something that you have not seen in maybe 10 years, is that Soldier Field has turned into like a home field advantage that it just wasn't before, right?
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance to be at the game, but Dan, you've talked to I know Kevin Powell has mentioned, when he's there on site, he says there's an electricity to the place that just wasn't there before.
Yeah, the atmosphere definitely is amped up a couple notches.
I was going to say, I think a big part of it too has to come with, whatever's going on in the locker room, it's very visible on the field. This is a team that wants to win. And different, like you said, the running game was pretty good last year, and it was, but other facets of the team were not as strong. So if we can't run the ball today, we're hosed. Whereas today it's like, well, hey, Eddie's out, but we're still going to get out there and we're going to win the game. You know what I mean? Like there's a mindset that is present, and I think it has to do with the fact that the team's been rebuilt and put on the field to win games on different levels, defense, yeah. Run game, long game, whatever it is.
And they seem
game.
To really enjoy each other's company. They seem
Certainly.
To really pull together. It doesn't seem like that's a polarizing offense-defense thing, and they all pick up the slack without a lot of finger-pointing. And we mentioned the defense doing what defenses are supposed to do, which is stop the other team. But they're also scoring. I mean, they've scored, six or seven touchdowns on the defensive side. So sometimes they're the ones actually making the points
sure.
that end up going on the scoreboard. So congratulations to the Bears. We're going to stay tuned for that, and we'll talk a little bit about it. Maybe, I don't know if there's any kind of sports-related Christmas movies, but we'll get to those. 312-981-7200. You can add your thoughts. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in studio. We're talking Christmas movies, some of the best of all time, or some obscure ones that that you love. From the 336, this is a question for you, Blake, because, we're getting into some of those where, is it a movie, is it not? Die Hard is one of those. People come down, you say yes. Does Meet John Doe qualify as a holiday movie? Every time frame is New Year's Eve. Frank Capra directs it, and it snows at the end. So I guess snow is...
It's a holiday movie for sure, just because of the time setting and everything. I don't know.
Well,
that's a tough call. But again, like, because of... And here's the thing. When people make movies, you know, and they put it around this time of year, I mean, it could be New Year's, it could be Christmas, and you could have something take place on New Year's Eve and people still have Christmas trees up. You know what I mean? Like, and so the vibe is it's a Christmas movie or it's a Christmas thing. I think this one might fall into that category, but it's festive. You know, it's a festive time of year film, but would I call it a Christmas movie?
I don't know. Well,
tough call.
We'll let that ruminate. We'll let it marinate a little bit, and we'll come out on the other end if just Christmas style weather could help kind of push it over the edge into Christmas. We will talk about it. 312-981-7200. You can add yours as well. We'll share as many as we can.
I want you for Christmas.
Nice one. Dan Long in the booth spinning the hits and keeping it festive here. It is Christmas Eve, 720 WGN high atop Chicagoland and the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs riding shotgun with us as well. And one of the questions that we're kind of talking about, well, we're sharing, is, you know, your favorite Christmas movies of all time, 312-981-7200. You can text them in. You can certainly call them in. But also that kind of tweener category of whether it is either right. a holiday movie, and then what are some of the criterias? And so Die Hard is one that you think it is because he is flying home to see his family for the holidays. Obviously, there's a lot of decorations in the backdrop. And so we had Peter from Decatur also added a couple extra ones, is that John McCain would kill 12 terrorists. So it'd be like your 12 Days of Christmas kind of thing. And then his wife's name is Holly, right?
Wife's name's Holly. There you go.
You can build that in. And so on the line with us, too, we were talking about Meet John Doe. And this is one where there were some questions as well. And we have Kathy from Highland Park. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, Kathy, so give it to us. You know, because we had talked about some of these that may not necessarily be a Christmas carol, you know, on paper, but they still have a lot of those same themes, right, as far as, you know, kind of that transformation on the personality side, you know, and kind of the redemption and things like that.
Yeah, so especially for Frank Capra, the character goes through a very difficult situation. And, of course, in Meet John Doe, that happens, and he ends up trying to commit suicide. And there is a redemption in that case, and the crowd or the common people kind of come to his aid and basically talk him off the ledge. So I always feel that if there is a character, you know, coming to grips and understanding himself better, like in the case of Scrooge or in the case of Meet John Doe, those, and also It's a Wonderful Life, right? Because he has a reawakening. Those can be considered, I think, parallel to, you know, the story of Christmas.
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life for sure. I appreciate that one as well. So thanks, Kathy. Thanks for adding in. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right. So there you have it. You know, people are.
She decided it for me.
Are adding,
it's a done deal.
It's a Wonderful Life is undeniable.
Oh.
You know, but it's also, too, is, I mean, it could be almost set at any time of the year. I mean, it happens to be Christmas, but really it's just, you know, it's a guy who learns to appreciate his kind of his life, right? Learns to understand the impact that he has and how important he has and has been to so many other people, right? When
right.
he feels like he's, you know, been slighted or is insignificant or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That he's really, things are pretty great, even though he's not necessarily, you know, appreciating it.
Right. And I think that, again, that all comes down to, for me, it's in Jimmy Stewart's performance. I mean, that, you know, that movie really, here's the thing. Got to admit it. I didn't see that movie until about 3 years ago. I had just, well, because it was always on. I mean, I know if I pieced like all the moments of it I had seen together, I had seen the movie. But like, I made a conscious effort to sit down and watch it start to finish. And I, of course, I appreciated it immensely, you know, because it is one of the true classics. And I see why it plays 24 hours a day on Christmas. But Jimmy Stewart, man, he's always been one of my favorites, and he's always going to be one of my favorites. And he's in my favorite movie of all time, Rear Window. But at the same time, It's a Wonderful Life is a wonderful movie, and it's hard not to like. It's hard to argue against it.
I'm always surprised at how many people may have not seen things that are just kind of really woven into the fabric of like the entertainment world of America. Where you think like, well, who hasn't seen that? Now here's a list of something that you may not necessarily believe. So we did the We did our radio play here on WGN of It's a Wonderful right. Life. I played, of course, and I'm sure I'm up for the for the local radio Oscar for
sure.
My performance.
You might even win a Peabody for this, I've heard.
Well, we can make up our own award. Maybe I'll win that. But I was Pop Bailey, so I was the dad of George Bailey. So it was a lot of fun. And one of, you know, an icon in the news business, certainly one of our great personalities here on WGN, Walter Jacobson.
Yeah.
While he was there, you know, playing a role and of course, Bill Left did a great job reworking the script, adding some extra funny in and building some of the personalities. And is that he had mentioned, he was talking to Rick Kogan and mentioned that he had never seen the movie.
Really?
He's never seen. So you are in some decent company.
Yeah. I felt like I was a real late bloomer on that one, because you hear about it every year. And, you know, at some point I'm like, well, you know what? I know I've seen this movie if I pieced it all together over the years, you know, just from family gatherings and stuff. But why don't I sit and watch it uninterrupted? And it is. It's an excellent film. I mean, I can see why it's so well loved, you know, and again, you put one of my favorite actors in something, I'm going to watch it. I wasn't protesting the movie or anything. I just never got around to sitting and enjoying it, and I'm glad I did. And again, as a radio play, I think that would be a really fun experience, so I'm kind of jealous of you. So, I mean, I've done radio plays. They're fun, but It's a Wonderful Life would be a cool experience.
Well, it's neat to have that happen, you know, especially with, you know, here, you know, on WGN, and then you're surprised at just how much, you know, for a lot of the people, all of them really, they had not practiced, you know, much with it. Some of the main characters did, but for a lot of us, you know, that we just, you walked in and certainly you had a script and you maybe read through it and you kind of knew what you were doing, but to just see how it all kind of comes together, and there was a live band and a lot of sound effects.
So cool.
To see it pulled together like that was really, really cool. And Carl Amari, who does our great radio plays here on the station, was directing it. So there's a lot of on the fly craziness.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good. So, but certainly It's a Wonderful Life stood the test of time. It's a classic now. Do you think that, that Aquaman, the most recent incarnation of Aquaman, will be, and we'll get into some of these current movies, because these are holiday movies in the way that they are being released during the holidays.
Yes.
Right? So people are seeing it. I'm trying to think back. I don't think there's any kind of Christmas elements going on. Maybe. Maybe not.
I don't remember any.
Maybe when he's
I just saw Nicole it the other
Kidman
night.
And he's a baby. Maybe was there, and they show him kind of growing up.
I'm sure they filmed a scene of his first Christmas or something.
But here's the thing, and you and I have had long conversations about superhero movies.
Yeah.
The Marvel, you know.
I feel like that's the thing people know me for more than anything when it comes to movies on WGN Radio. He talks about all the superhero movies, which I do. I love them.
Yeah. And so here is another addition to it. And this, I don't even say it's a rivalry because it really isn't. But, you know, just that kind of separate, same basic context of superheroes doing super things. But you've got the DC universe. You've got the Marvel universe. On paper, at least in the dollars that they have generated and the amount of successful films, certainly the scale is weighted way on the Marvel side. But they made some ground with Wonder Woman. I think that was really well received, right? And sort of was a glimmer of, hey, maybe it's not all bad and we can do this.
I think that was actually the Twitter version of my review of Wonder Woman. I was like, this is good. And I think we might be in for some good stuff coming up.
And so I think it's Jason Momoa, right? He is Aquaman, and I really like him. I liked him in the cameo in the other movies because he's an interesting and kind of a different take, just like Tony Stark was a different take on
the whole. He's doing his own thing.
Yeah, where he's kind of a brooding, you know, I don't know, Polynesian tattooed.
Funny.
He's funny.
That's the big thing.
You know, muscle bound kind of. Like Dwayne Johnson, The Rock-esque.
Yes.
And he's kind of surly and not all that polite.
Right.
But he's Aquaman, right?
But he is, yeah.
And so I really liked him, so I was excited for this movie, got a chance to see it. And I want to say, you asked if I enjoyed it when we talked a little bit about it off the air, and I did enjoy it. Not necessarily for all the reasons I thought I would, for some of them.
Okay.
But there were things that I thought could have been done so much either different or better or whatever, but Blake, I want to get your thoughts, like Aquaman.
So I enjoyed this movie as well. I think that what the DC side of the comic book rivalry needed to have happen was they showed us the beginnings of it with Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman is not an epic visually in turn on the same page that Aquaman is. Wonder Woman has epic moments, and it has great. There's a lot of greatness in that film. The thing with Aquaman, though, is it just goes huge, big. Everything is big. Ostentatious might even be the right word at times. But I wanted that going in. I wanted to see DC really put money behind it, put it in the hands of a director who visually can go big and have a lot of fun. They have the right charismatic actor, you know, in this lead role. Jason Momoa is Aquaman, and he's making it his own, much like, as you mentioned, Robert Downey Jr. did with Tony Stark. This movie doesn't owe anything to Justice League or the other films that, you know, Jason Momoa's character has shown up in, or the other things that he's shown up in. It is very standalone. It does its own thing. I want two more Aquaman movies. I want to see them build off of what this was. And the other thing to note, I believe, if my timelines are correct, this movie was supposed to be out last year, like at the end of last year, but they decided to delay it. And I think the reason was because DC knew they had something, but they wanted to put a bigger push behind making it this epic, huge, let's get bigger visuals. Because if you go back and look through a lot of the criticisms of things like Batman versus Superman, Man of Steel, Justice League, these are very brooding, dark, muted color palette films.
Just all depressing.
That feels, compared to the very vibrant-looking Marvel films, I think when James Wan, the director of this, stepped in, and Momoa, you know, is this big, charismatic, fun guy to put on camera. And again, he's surrounded by good actors all over. Willem Dafoe's in this. Amber Heard's putting in a good performance. Dolph Lundgren's in it, and I enjoyed him. Like and again, it's nice, Patrick Wilson, et cetera, Nicole Kidman. When they went to direct all the action sequences, like that first fight sequence with Nicole Kidman's character, I was like, okay, we're breaking rules and we're having fun doing it, and this is great. I love it. And that's from like a technical standpoint. They did what they wanted to do to make this story fun and engaging throughout. And again, if I went and saw it again, I'd probably see some dragging moments. But overall, I really did enjoy it.
We're going to get into it. We're going to talk a little bit about what is right about it. What are some of the things that Blake appreciates? What are some of the things that that I have some questions. I know a lot of the listeners do as well. Some things that maybe were done that could have been done differently. Some of the inspirations for it, and some of the ways that maybe it could be even better, and maybe what to look forward in the future. We'll get with those. If you are on hold, you can definitely stay on hold. We'll get to you right after the break. 312-981-7200. Throughout the course of the program, we are sharing our favorite Christmas movies of all time, holiday movies of all time, and you can add yours as well, so stay tuned for that. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. It's Dane here on 720 WGN.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel.
Nice. 720 WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is Dane here in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. Riding shotgun is Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, and that one was by request. Thanks, Dan. So, yeah, I guess you could even text in and call in with your favorite Christmas song. We'll try to use those for the bumpers as well. It is Christmas Eve. People are going to have some time to get out there in the theaters, not only to see some of the Christmas movies, and we'll share as many as we can. 312-981-7200. Bad Santa is another one that people have texted. And it's that one is, I mean, it's really good, but it's still kind of a guilty
very
pleasure.
Adult, yes. As well.
Right.
Oh, it honestly, it's very high on my favorite Christmas movies
list. Who's a more evil character? Is it Billy Bob Thornton as Bad Santa or the Grinch?
Oh man, I'd probably go with Billy Bob's character because he's borderline. You can't redeem him. You just can't do it.
And so, okay, so here's the other thing. Before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about one of the movies that's in the theater for the holiday season. It's a huge hit. I think it is doing very well at the box office. It is Aquaman, and I had really high hopes for it, and I think I enjoyed it. I think it was a good movie. People enjoyed it that I was with, but it was one of those things where I thought it could have been better. You said it was, over the top and everything. And I think they went a little too big on some of the, you've got fight scenes with, I don't think this is a spoiler alert, but they're, with, giant seahorses and all sorts of things.
Sure.
And then, they're contemplating world domination.
Right.
Like while riding, I guess, underwater alligators and sharks and things.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of that stuff. But I think what they did is it's sort of a if you can't beat them, join them thing.
Sure.
And so I think that they took some cues from Marvel in some ways that they could tweak or build elements in, and one of which, you mentioned not brooding and dark.
Yep.
As you know, because here's the other side of it, too, with Jason Momoa, is that he's got a sense of humor.
He does.
You know, he's able to, like, and not in a whole big, you know, Bob Hope, he's got a room full of jokes in the vault thing. But he's got kind of a fun, playful side, and they built that into it. So they built some of the humor into it, but it wasn't quite as, you could tell they were trying, but it wasn't quite the Marvel, like, jokes, you know, like the Tony Stark jokes that are really, like, smart and funny, or even, like, the Ragnarok jokes, you know, you were friends from work, you know what I mean, where you're just like, wow, this is really good.
I think what they were doing was trying to play the transition toward being more fun and open and less brooding. I think they played it safe. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't a ton of footage of Momoa just doing tons more funny stuff that we may never get to see, or we will see on a Blu-ray release or something like that. But I think with regards to the humor and how they were going to play that, I think they played that a little safe. I think they wanted to do, like, hey, we're going to build this franchise and this. And trust me, if you would have told me right now that the DC movie I'm most excited for next is another Aquaman movie over a Batman or even a Wonder Woman, although this new Wonder Woman movie looks really cool because it's going to happen in the 80s, but or a Superman movie, like, he won me over. Yeah. And they played that safe, but they also went huge with these big war scenes. And I kind of felt like I was just getting lost in the shuffle. That might have been one of my criticisms of the movie, was that, yes, these scenes are big, and they're you know, violent but not bloody. They're not bloody. We're not seeing blood in the water when characters die. But it also, you know, is kind of an interesting, you know, take on the Arthurian legend of pulling Excalibur in a lot of ways. And you get that from the trailer. You get that he's on a quest of some kind, and he's going to claim his throne. But where we go with it, it's like I kind of felt like a lot of it was very easily predetermined. Parts of it felt a little predictable, but I enjoyed my journey with these characters. So is this one of the best movies I saw all year? No. Is this one I do want to push people out to see? Oh, absolutely. And again, I get no money from the movie industry other than I just like talking about it, but I think people will enjoy this. I think it is an enjoyable film.
I think it goes without saying, and I think that the box office is a testament that people are getting out there, they're enjoying it, they're telling two friends and so on.
Yep.
And people are excited about this option on the kind of Marvel connection and comparison side. It's neat to take a character that isn't one of these A-list superheroes, you know, like Batman, Superman, because you really do think, you know, just like Iron Man was kind of an afterthought. He wasn't like a big time superhero, right? And now, and now he is an Aquaman, is the same kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
Just like his, yeah, I mean, he was just like, it's not Superman,
right?
He's Aquaman. The fight scenes that they had, they felt obligated to do them because they can, you know, with the CGI and, you know, you have the expanse of the ocean and everything happening. It felt a little bit, you know, just the way that some of that they moved, some of the characters, it felt a little bit, a little Avengers, a little, you know, the Attack on New York kind of thing.
It
just
was
very similar with the way things looked. I think it was just too, and plus they handled too much. What are they going to do in the next ones? Because you already had all the tribes got together. They all tried to take over the world. He established himself as, you know, I mean, they covered so much ground in it that
they did.
You wonder, like, what's next? The mom came back. I mean, they didn't have to do this all in one show.
The movie, I think, does it bite off more than it can chew? Sometimes less is more and leave me wanting more. And in this case, I think they gave me everything I could want. And now if you told me, hey, you got to wait 2 years to see another Aquaman movie, that's fine. I just hope that the next one's good and engaging, because you gave me a whole lot in this one. And again, I think this was a film that had to prove that DC can make a good, you know, can make good movies, because Wonder Woman opened our eyes to seeing a really good DC movie. But was that lightning in a jar? I think Aquaman takes us on this path of saying, no, they can make good movies. They just have to invest in those movies and those characters. And I'm intrigued to see where they go with it from here.
I think from the dialogue standpoint, too, is like Wonder Woman really did have a lot of that real smart dialogue.
Yes.
The joke, of course, you have Chris Pine and Gal Gadot. And I mean, they really got together. I think it was an emergence for her, too, where she really did. There was a lot of, I think, and there's, I think, a difference there, because I think the writing was just a little bit, maybe a lot, like just better. I think that they could have done more with it. We'll see how it goes. But when it comes to sequels, we're going to see some more Aquaman. And then when it comes to, you know, the personification of Santas, you know, we've got the bad Santa situation. Uh-huh. We've got Zan on the line from Chicago. Zan, you're a fan of Bad Santa. You say that it's one of those movies we should definitely check out. Maybe it with adult company, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're all day in the kitchen and gift wrapping, Bad Santa is like a breath of fresh air after all those smaltzy movies. I just couldn't believe it. It's R-rated. Put the kids to bed or get them out the room. Because it's absolutely unbelievably raunchy. I think that's the name for it.
Well, Zan, you said a breath of fresh air. He's like a breath of, like, Mad Dog 2020 kind of breath air.
You got it.
All right. Thank you, Zan. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
All righty.
All right. Well, there you go. So, I mean, it was Billy Bob Thornton's.
Oh, Bad Santa is one of those movies. I mean, I actually got to spend a lot of time with the director and the editor of the film after they screened the director's cut of it at Roger Ebert's Film Festival. This was in my early days of attending that festival. And I got to hang out with them at the after party, just talking about the movie and making it and what it was like for them. You know, they were in this, like, closed down mall. It was humid and hot and just not a pleasant experience. And Billy Bob was, like, divorcing Angelina Jolie at the time. And so whether or not he was imbibing actual alcohol, was he acting or was he really, you know? And so, and the other thing is the editor, I've stayed in touch with him over the years. One thing he's pointed out is how brutal it was to edit the TV cut of that movie. And so now when I watch it, I laugh really hard because I can just imagine Robert Hoffman, the editor, like, agonizing over this work that, you know, this was John Ritter's final performance. Bernie Mac was great in this movie. Like, great talent on screen in this movie. And, like, you have to, like now your job is to get this movie, which should never have been played on television, ready for television. You have to cut all these great moments. And he was like, it was just so hard, like, to watch. But, you know, playback over and over. Because if you've ever edited anything, you know, video, I'm a video editor, I know this. It can get agonizing, let alone when you have to butcher some of your own work.
And some of the best stuff, you know. Yeah. Zan had mentioned, too, that it was, you know, and what are the essential ingredients to a holiday classic? And I guess raunchiness is one of those that you're going to look for as well. And so when we come back from this, we'll talk about this a little bit. You know, there's a blank slate, a blank canvas when it comes to playing Aquaman. I don't know that there's anybody that, you know, whereas with Superman, you had Christopher Reeve. I think you had things that you had to work around. But for Santa, is there sort of like a third rail or some way that you feel you need to, or is Santa just kind of, he's open, you know, you can go ahead and play Santa with whatever kind of situation. And I think Billy Bob did it. He did it well. You made it entertaining. Obviously it wasn't like the most flattering.
Yeah. Portrayal. I mean, in the end, he's really playing a convict in a Santa suit who kind of steps in just as a job to, you know, put a roof over his own head. But then he starts seeing the next score. But he never takes the Santa outfit off, so it just kind of, you know, demolishes your idea of what Santa is.
But again, you see, and it's one of these themes through it, a little bit of a redemption at the end and an appreciation
for
his fellow man. And he's, you know, his eyes are opened through the relationship that he has while he's busy robbing the family with the
kid. Of course.
Yes, right.
Yes.
They're coming back, no Santa.
Nice. 720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here until 5 a.m. Riding shotgun is blockbuster Blake Stubbs as we break down holiday movies in general, certainly some of the movies that are out in the holiday time. And we were talking before we went to the news about Aquaman, a lot of high hopes, you know, for those fans of the DC universe. You don't want them to just take their ball and go home or decide to quit and say, like, hey, we're no good at this. And I think they made some improvements. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the kind of thing where they've kind of built some different movies and franchises, and they've got high hopes for Aquaman. We do, too. And what did you think of Nicole Kidman, her role in it, you know?
I think that I was glad they chose a solid actress like Nicole Kidman to sort of step into this role who may or may not have a bigger part to play, you know. And I don't want to spoil like where she goes, what she does, or if she's going to be part of all of this. But
she plays the Queen of Atlantis.
The Queen of Atlantis, yeah. And the thing is that she is Aquaman's mother. But she ends up on the surface world because she was trying to escape, like, sort of an arranged marriage, a situation she didn't really want to be a part of. She ends up going back. And then he doesn't see her. She's not a part of his life.
Yeah, she's forced to do that.
She's forced to do it. Yes. And so to have an actress like Nicole Kidman, you know, who can really convey it all. And by the way, she's got a movie coming out called Destroyer. So if you don't want to see her in a comic book movie, you can watch her in a real dramatic, gritty movie that's probably going to get some attention. Because she's that good of an actress. And I think that I'm glad that we're not, you know, getting comic book movies that fail to attract good acting talent. Now, I see Aquaman being a true breakthrough role for Jason Momoa. Now, everybody knows him from Game of Thrones. Some people still know him from Baywatch. I know him from Baywatch. So, but and the show, not the bad movie that, you know, I remember downing big time on this station.
He could have been like the third lifeguard from the left or something.
But the thing is that, you know, they can make stars, but they can also bring in great talent to support and help lift up and tell these stories. And I think, you know, the big thing to take away from Aquaman, because I'm high on this movie. I want people to go see it. This is a story in a lot of ways that you've heard told before, but I enjoyed the way they told it. And the other thing is that there's a very, you know, a big brooding visual storytelling style that these DC movies have had. This movie abandons that, and it goes for a very vibrant, bright, engaging, colorful sort of way of telling a comic book hero story. And the thing is, I'm still going to just, you know, jump on, and I know he can carry my weight, Jason Momoa's shoulders and say, this dude carries the movie very well. He works well with everybody he's on screen with. And I don't want to have anybody fail to mention, or I don't want to be one of those people that fails to mention a good performance. And I think Patrick Wilson, who is a good actor, a great actor, in fact, one of my favorites, he steps in and plays the villain in this movie, the real villain of the movie, his brother. I think it's King Orm.
He wasn't a super villainy villain.
No, he was more of a, this was the way he was raised. He's trying to fulfill his destiny. This is what he believes to be right. And he does that in a very serviceable, good way, not where he's taking the movie away from everybody else. It's just sometimes you got to get somebody who's really good that can step in and play the part. And he does that very well, and he does a lot with the part that he's given. And I think that if we can get a villain, you know, is it one-dimensional? I don't think so. I think there's a little more going on than we're used to seeing. But if we can keep getting villains that are good, if we can, you know, as an audience, if we keep getting villains that are good, we keep Jason Momoa in this part, I think this franchise has got, you know, a lot of legs or fins, I guess, if you want to throw a pun in there. But I see this working, and I see more that can happen with it. And again, I wanted an enjoyable DC movie. I got an enjoyable DC movie. And I think that fans out there are going to see it the same way.
I'm wondering if 312-981-7200, if you do have some thoughts on some of the movies that are out in the theaters now, is I'm wondering if the you know, on the superhero side, I think people can appreciate the fact that they can do with the technology and the CGI. You just have so much more that you can do, as opposed to, you remember the early, you know, the special effects in those early Superman movies.
It was,
you know, still he could fly, but obviously he's on some wires and some things like that.
And a blue screen's behind him.
I don't even know if
or green screen
invented blue screen, right? Who knows what it was? But the where now you can do so many different things, you know, with it. And here's another, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but because you remember the Aquaman of the past, I don't remember what his name was, but it was, you know, a guy that, you know, it was an actor. I think he was an actor maybe in Dallas or something in the TV show, but there used to be a television series called Aquaman. And it was a guy that wasn't really, you know, how Jason Momoa is, you know, a physical specimen. You know, where this guy was just kind of ordinary. He wasn't like out of shape, but he was just like a regular guy in sort of an ill-fitting, you know, yellow and green costume. And it was a regular television show, and you kind of dealt with the fact that he, you know, could summon and maybe talk to fish. And so with the special effects and kind of the sensibilities they have now, they're able to do so much more. A movie I saw a trailer for was a show that I had seen in reruns as a kid. And if I remember correctly, The show was called Shazam, and
yes,
he was a superhero to whatever extent. But if I can remember correctly, they were maybe in the Southwest, maybe New Mexico, maybe Arizona, driving around in a Winnebago.
Okay.
And it was a guy and a kid. And whenever, I guess, the somebody did something bad or the spirit would move him or whatever, he'd be like, Shazam!
And he would turn into...
like a lightning bolt. And he would just have sort of a ill-fitting, onesie, pajama kind of costume.
Outfit, yeah.
And it wasn't like... there was nothing magical about it. I don't remember what his superpower was, but that was that. And now, I guess, in that quest for the next... Iron Man or next superhero that could be a hit. And so have you seen the trailer?
I have. Zachary Levi is going to be playing the superhero embodiment of Shazam.
And he's a comedic type of guy.
He is. I mean, a lot of people will know him from the TV show Chuck, which he was the star of. And again, I liked Chuck. I enjoyed... Zachary Levi is a charismatic young actor who I think is going to do quite well in this role. Now, I don't know how this will be received, because he's wearing... I mean, he bulked up for this in a big way, but then what he's wearing is actually a suit that is very cartoony, and I don't know how that's going to translate to audiences. Now, in the trailer, I've had people say, oh, that looks fun, and I've also had people say, that looks so stupid. And I don't know... I don't know why we always... I feel like in this day and age, because of the internet, we rush to negativity a lot, and I try to avoid that.
That's true.
I have my questions about whether or not this movie's going to be good, but the trailer that they even showed before Aquaman, I know you saw the same trailer I did, I'm intrigued. I think that this movie, I don't think it's going to be big on the way of Aquaman, but I think that it has a chance to show that DC is willing to, flex its funny bone or funny muscles a little bit and, let you get in there and enjoy something, as opposed to, hey, we have to, make sure we do Superman 100% right, or we got to shut all this down. I don't feel any of those stakes when I watched the trailer for Shazam. And in fact, I kind of laughed a couple of times and I thought, all right, this might pull me. I might enjoy this.
If they get it right, then I think they'll really have something there. And I think that they're close. They're kind of stirring the secret sauce here, and they're trying to crack the code and trying to figure out. And we've talked at length a number of times. It feels as though on the Marvel side that they have it all. They've got 20 movies planned out, and maybe, I guess they did, but
they're
at
20 right now. They've released 20 of them. It's crazy.
But that first Iron Man was such a out of the blue hit.
Yeah.
Where you had sort of a James Bond-esque kind of guy who was maybe part scientist, part defense contractor, part superhero.
Yeah.
And it just worked in so many different ways, and I think it opened the door for people to realize, because before that, I don't think the superhero genre really... I don't want to say it didn't exist, but it certainly wasn't a, let's do that kind of situation.
Right.
And they were able to build off of it, and it has become just this huge phenomenon. But I don't think, if that doesn't go well, and Robert Downey Jr. was not necessarily one of those, he was like on the outs. He was like a peripheral.
He was slowly creeping back in. That was the thing. I mean, but to put that on his shoulders was huge. If this doesn't work, where do we go from here?
Well, I don't know if anyone even understood what it could be or what. So I don't know that he felt the pressure, but it certainly was a great opportunity, and it paid off in a big way. But I don't know. So I'm excited. I think if they find the right combination, whether it's Shazam or whether I'm excited to see if they make a vehicle for Flash, where
And the thing that DC has been doing well for the last few years is they've been pushing their properties to television. So the Flash television show has done very well. The Flash film has been pushed back into 2019, I think, late 2019. But that movie, I believe, could have been out as early as last year. It's had director issues, I think, and the studio, again, they want to make sure they're doing these right as opposed to just doing them. The other thing is, I think they're trying to make sure that they don't do too much like what Marvel did. Because in the case of Iron Man, which is a great example because that's where it all started 10 years ago, Iron Man built a system for how to make this work. And now we have an entire cinematic universe. And again, a lot of that falls on Jon Favreau. A lot of that falls on Robert Downey Jr., Shane Black, the people who wrote and produced and put these things together. It can't be understated. They created something that exploded and in the best way. DC is trying to find their method and their way of doing it. And they, I will give them credit. They stuck to that brooding, style, which was very in contrast to what Marvel was doing, but it just didn't click.
Worked in general for a lot of the Batman movies, right?
Yeah.
It worked in general to have a guy that was just depressed and grumbling and mumbling under his breath, and you know, everything's done in black and gray. And
I was pro Batfleck, all right? I remember when they said they cast him, I was like, look, Ben Affleck's a fine actor. Like, if they give him something to do and it's good, he's going to do it well. And then you watch the movie Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, which is not a good movie, but he is good in it. I want more of that. Sadly, we were not going to get a Batfleck, you know, Batman standalone film with him in the suit. Like, it's going to be somebody else. I believe that was the latest in the last time. It was a saga. There was a saga about this. It's like, is Ben Affleck going to play it? Is he not going to play it? And I believe the final note is that Henry Cavill is no longer Superman and Ben Affleck is no longer Bruce Wayne.
So they're doing kind of like, you know,
so they're going to do
a Colonel with KFC. It could be anybody.
They're going to change it up. And that's fine. If they want to do that and make it work and give us a new type of Batman, I'm all for it.
Well, what you're seeing here with any of these, whether it's some of the holiday movies with Christmas Carol, where you can just kind of do different versions of it with different people, you're seeing that. Or whether it's, you know, the Superman movies or Batman, right? You get a bunch of different people in there. And you're getting extra chances to make maybe what is a new and improved kind of take on things or spin on that. And we're going to talk about that. Transformers is one that has, you know, it was a great phenomenon as a kid's cartoon, as a toy series. You know, the movies have had, I think, differing levels of success and kind of fallen recently more kind of in that disappointing category. But Bumblebee is one that did sort of a prequel, and we're going to talk about that when we come back from this break. We've got Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in studio with us here. It is Dane on 720 WGN. WGN live here in the Allstate Skyline studio, high atop Chicago on Christmas Eve. And Blockbuster Blake Stubbs riding shotgun with us as we kind of break down some of your favorite holiday movies, whether they are your favorite Christmas movies of all time. 312-981-7200. You can text in, you can call in, you can share yours. Ones that are maybe off the beaten path a little bit, or some that are your favorites that you've got to see a bunch. And then also some of the movies that are out in the theaters right now during the holiday time that, with Christmas as your own backdrop, if someone was doing a documentary about this according to Blake's criteria for Christmas movie, it would be a holiday movie.
Yeah.
If they just did a documentary of movies that you were seeing, even if they're not Christmas movies because it's this time period, you would fit the bill. And, you and I have talked a little bit about it. We did a little bit during On the Road. And, you know, whether it's the superhero movies where there's a lot of high hopes for something good, you hope it's going to be good. People are pulling for these. And on the Transformer side, you know, always great movies to look at. You know, sometimes lacking.
Very pretty to see.
A little bit on the plot side. But, I mean, this is, I think, the start of something big with Bumblebee.
I think it is. So Bumblebee is a prequel. It takes place in 1987. So this predates all of the, what I'll call, what many call, what it is called, the Bayhem, which is the Michael Bay directed, big budget, lots of explosions,
Bayhem,
very little story, and it's one of those things where to make a Transformers film right now, this is, I believe, the sixth live action Transformers film that's been made, but this one's a prequel and it's under new management. Okay.
The sign is slapped on the front.
Here's the thing. I had high hopes, and I remember predicting that this movie would surprise people, talking about it with you, I think a few weeks back. The trailer looked okay. It looked interesting. It had some weird sexual tension between the girl and Bumblebee in the first trailer, and then they fixed that in the second trailer, and I was like, okay, good. And it's not present in the film, okay? It's just not.
Because some of our listeners, Zan particularly, she likes a little bit of raunchiness.
The raunch, yeah, and that's fine. I'm fine with it, too. That was just a little weird. That was just weird, not raunch. It was just odd. But the second trailer kind of eliminated that, and I think somebody got slapped on the hand, and they were like, wait, why did you edit this that way? Trailer editing is very different. Like, the person who edits a film does not edit the trailer. Yeah, it's a very different ball game. They didn't show too much in the trailers. So that's one thing I think people out there right now who are intrigued and planning on seeing this, because Christmas Day is a big movie going day in America. I think that people who are waiting to see it, maybe with some family and stuff, because it's a favorite, you know, Transformers are cool and we want to go, know that they don't spoil everything in the trailer. One big thing for me is that this is under new management in the name of, and it's in the hands of a guy named Travis Knight. Travis Knight made his directorial debut with Kubo and the Two Strings last year or 2 years ago, and it was one of my favorite films of that year. Beautiful animation, knew how to tell a story, great characters, just everything about that movie clicked for me. So when I heard that it was being placed not in Michael Bay's hands, but in someone else's, and for the first time ever, a Transformers movie had less money. They didn't put as much money behind this as they did the other Transformers films.
Was it not as available, or was it just...
It's a smaller movie in scope, so I think that just naturally it had less money attached to it. And you can tell in some ways they don't have as many. So great action movies sometimes are much like great musicals. You know, the action beats, the action sequences always come at the time when like a song would come in if you were watching a stage musical or something like that. This movie doesn't behold itself to showing too much action. Okay, it sticks to a great opening action sequence. There are some small action sequences throughout, and then a really good third act batch of sequences that involve a lot of action. So they're able to actually tell a story. They're able to actually have character growth. They have actual like emotional connections between Bumblebee and the humans that he's trying to protect.
It's like, a robot car, Blake.
It is a robot car, but he's got a personality. I mean, you know, Optimus Prime has a personality too.
Optimus Prime he's often, you know, sharing just nuggets of wisdom, you know, whether it's like how, you know, residents of the galaxies should be able to behave and get along and whatever and all that. I don't remember in the trailer, can Bumblebee talk?
So here's the thing. Bumblebee can talk, but he suffered some kind of injury and his voice was taken from him.
Oh.
They show that incident in the film, and there's some article out there that's clickbaiting you into checking out. But it's a very quick scene, but it makes total sense in the scope of like what was going on, like the stakes of his character and what he's supposed to be doing. He kind of loses his confidence. And his sense of strength, I think. And so he's more about, you know, protecting those that care about him. And then eventually he has to rise to the occasion. So again, this movie has an actual story. It has implications for what we would then see, you know, 25, 30 years later when, Transformers, the first film comes out. Like it sets up what will be eventually, but it stays contained and enjoyable. And I found that all the performances, I mean, Hailee Steinfeld is one of the best actresses of her generation, and she's in a big budget robot car movie. But it's fun and enjoyable, and she gives a dynamite performance, I think, for the type of movie that this is. These movies should not lack good performances, and they should not lack good writing. I think this particular film steps up its game in the Transformers visual, because when I was a kid, you know, the death of Optimus Prime in the cartoon was a huge deal. I mean, that was like the hero dying, and you had to learn, and that was like one of the first interactions I had with death as a young child. Why can't we have all the Transformers movies be that good and impacting? You know, like, why can't that be the thing on the wall that says, if you're going to write anything for these characters, keep this as like the basis of where you go. So in this particular movie, they kind of wrote an actual, I think, movie, and then they just put Transformers in it.
Okay,
as opposed to, we have big robots and they have to blow things up and they have to fight each other. Right. But people have to talk in between the big action sequences.
Right.
Now, there was a story here first, and then they add the rest of it.
I think that's an important. I think that's an important point to take, because, you know, you're looking at it where like you put a lot more meat into the storyline and the character development, as opposed to just saying, you know, building your acronym. Okay, this blows up, then this is that post-apocalyptic scene, and then this happens, and then trying to fill in what Mark Wahlberg's lines are going to be as he's running away. What is he saying over his shoulder?
Yeah. We got one of the most charismatic actors on the planet. Just give him some stuff to say. And here's the thing, like, Wahlberg doesn't just phone it in, right? Like, Wahlberg tries. I mean, you know, you've seen
We've
him do great work.
If you,
I mean, but in The Departed, he gives a really great performance. So, you know, thinking about this, if we can get great actors, why can't we give them good things to say and do, and motivations and growth? And the thing is with Steinfeld, I mean, if you saw True Grit, the remake of True Grit with her that the Coen brothers directed, what a breakout role for her. And, you know, she's got a music career. She's doing very well. But Bumblebee, I think, is going to be a great way for people to see Transformers, which for a lot of people, those are characters they hold very near and dear. But also a story that, you know, they care about. They care about these characters. They care about what happens to everybody in the movie. And the thing is, all these characters other than Bumblebee, you don't see in the other Transformers movies. So the stakes are kind of real. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to any of these people. There's an unpredictability to it, and somehow they were able to actually make me care. So I'm telling people that Bumblebee, as a, you know, as a critic and a fan, Bumblebee is the Transformers movie I've always wanted. And that's kind of where it is. That's where it sits. Like, it's good. And I think people need to go see it. And you don't have to listen to me. Like, Rotten Tomatoes is through the roof for this movie. It's like 94%.
Wow.
Like, it is very, because a lot of people, that's their metric. That's what they go by. And Bumblebee is, it's being liked by everyone right now.
Quickly, and we can talk a little bit about it after the news as well, is where do you go from here? Because you can go, you know, like Star Wars has just, you know, you tell a bunch of stories, but you want to have a movie out every 6 months, then you have to figure out other storylines or other people to highlight. And so you say that this is kind of the prequel that sets it all up, and it's very well done. Do you go back and do you redo some of the ones that maybe weren't done as well, or do you just find a totally different, you do Optimus Prime as a kid, off on his own island kind of thing?
I think that this movie is a great indicator that they can tell a good story, that they can use that great visual. And again, I will give high marks to Michael Bay and his crew for bringing those characters to life on the big screen with big action that was engaging and cool. But I think that they can revisit this franchise now and go forward. Meaning everything that's happened, you know, in the five films that were made or whatever, that all happened. It is what it is. But where do we go? They can create something new, and they can use this movie as the basis for how to, you know, set tone and tell story and use these characters in good ways.
See, so we're looking ahead to kind of the future of filmmaking and some movies that are anticipated, and people are looking forward to them that they haven't happened yet. We're going to do a little bit of that. We're going to look back at some of your favorite all-time holiday films as well, 312-981-7200, and you can share yours. We'll read as many as we can. We've got quite a few left to do. We'll get to after this. And also, too, from the 773, remember we mentioned, kind of an underwhelming Aquaman incarnation, and it was the man from Atlantis from the 773, and it was Patrick Duffy. Who was the
Bobby Ewing from Dallas,
who was the equally underwhelming superhero in that one. So we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have more with that again. 312-981-7200. We're going to get into our list for the greatest holiday movies of all time. Some are some that you think of kind of in that team photo. Some you'll be surprised by. That's right. Merry Christmas, everybody. 720 WGN high atop Chicagoland, the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here until 5 a.m. We are here. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs riding shotgun. Dan Long is in spinning the hits with a lot of, I think interesting selections.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a holiday element built into that. And we've even done a couple requests. You know,
yeah.
Send us your request. We'll play it.
Oh, I'm going to throw one at his way here and see if he can make it happen. I don't want to put him on the spot right now.
Don't do it.
It'll come in on the next break.
312-981-7200. Your thoughts, your favorite movies, ones that you think should be on this 50 greatest holiday movies list. And we're going to get to them. And some of them, you know, some of them you're like, okay, yeah, right, I get this. And maybe we'll have debates over whether they should be closer to the top or, you know, closer to the bottom or. But Love Actually, that's a...
Yeah, you know, Richard Curtis directed it. Basically everyone in England is in the movie. And a few Americans are in there too. No, it's like
Hugh Grant in it or something?
Yeah, oh yeah. Hugh Grant is the prime minister. It's one
are
of those...
Are there only like six, you know, because for certain things... You know, it doesn't seem like Hollywood has like a Rolodex that's super deep on things. It's like, oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that
you
guy,
know,
definitely.
The heavyset guy that we need for that. Okay, him.
Yeah. Hugh Grant fits the bill. And again, this is Richard Curtis. This is a director who believes in happy endings and who loves to, you know, be real about things and some of the endings of these stories, because it's basically like a living anthology, like in the moment, like as it's all happening concurrently. So like all these stories, it's all these different characters. It's this ensemble film that, you know, trying to find love and a special, you know, part around Christmas. And it takes place over like the month that leads up to Christmas. And it's a very English film. I don't want to say British because it's got everybody in it, but like it's a very English film that, a lot of people connect with and a lot of people feel, sort of, you know, hits all the right notes. Now this is a film that I've seen probably. Gosh, I've probably seen it over half a dozen times. And I remember enjoying it a lot the first couple times I saw it. It's not aging as well with me as you might think. Because again, like it's the same film every year when I watch it, but I'm just sort of like finding myself a little
Maybe
more.
You're in a different place.
I'm in a different place. That's exactly it. I'm very much in a different place.
The movie is the same movie. You know, they haven't changed a scene in the movie. It's Blake. You've changed. And when you think about this on the holiday side, these movies can be anywhere from, you know, grainy black and white from the Christmas Carol, the original with Marley with his, we've now found
with the mump wrap.
His mump remedy.
Yeah.
His mump wrap remedy. And then you've got something like Love Actually. And then you've got a very Harold and Kumar.
Christmas. Yeah. Christmas. Wild one. That's a wild one. Yeah. The old Harold and Kumar stuff. That was the thing where, you know, that I believe was the third Harold and Kumar film. And so it was just sort of a wild, I think it was in 3D. I think that was a big part of it too. Like they kind of joked on 3D and everything else.
Wait, hold on. Dan, you've got something?
I'd be remiss if I didn't point this out just because a listener called in and offered a clarification on the mumps wrap on Jacob Marley.
Yes.
It's actually a wrap that they used to put around in that era. On corpses,
ew.
You know, to keep everything above the neck in place.
Oh, because he was dead.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So there's okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, now I know. Thank you, whoever. That's okay.
Because well, you don't want to go see a loved one, and then I guess it'd be more appealing to see their, you know, with this big like tourniquet on their head than I guess their mouth being open.
Of course, a little awkward. I think for everyone involved on the final departing. Goodbye, pay your respects. And
any old-time remedies or anything like that, 312-981-7200. And so the Harold and Kumar, now this was, I think, in general, from the movie side of things, this is, you know, like Mr. Magoo got to do his own Christmas special, just
Absolutely.
Like Mickey Mouse, and Harold and Kumar did as well.
Mm-hmm.
But these are guys that you didn't necessarily know were going to even have an opportunity to. This was sort of a... like a random kind of cult classic, the original one.
The first one,
But like they went to White Castle, right?
Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. They get high. They're hungry. They have a debate about where they're going to go. And then White Castle is the end goal. That's where they're going to go. And of course it's wild because they're so committed to this. They're not going to break. They're not just going to go to McDonald's or get something else. They want White Castle and all the crazy. So, I mean, here's the thing. If you have good characters, you can tell different stories with those characters. The movies practically write themselves. The thing is that Harold and Kumar had this like X factor for me, which was Neil Patrick Harris playing a hyperbolized crazy version of himself. And the thing is, Neil Patrick Harris,
a former child actor, Doogie Howser,
and they reference that a lot.
Right.
And this was before his How I Met Your Mother break,
right.
You know, which was not really a break for him. It was just a great role for him to play for many years. But by the third one here, it's just, you know, Neil Patrick Harris got to be a part of it again. It's, you know, if they made a Harold and Kumar movie now, I'd go see it. Why wouldn't I? Like, I remember enjoying them. They were funny. They were, you know, they're not like on the level of like Caddyshack, most quotable thing I've ever seen, but they're entertaining. And they made a Christmas movie. So why would I, you know, again, you have good characters. Just put them at that time of year. Give it a real Christmas push. And I'm sure that, you know, audiences will laugh. And to be honest with you, they did. I mean, look, it has a 67% rating on Rotten Tomatoes for a movie that, if you were predicting it, you'd probably say, oh, no, that's not going to be well-liked. It was way more well-liked than a lot of people thought.
I think very likable, entertaining, and fun, right? That's, mm-hmm. you know, it may not be your cup of tea as far as some of the situations that they find themselves in or the drug-related backdrop and
right.
some of this. But in general, it's kind of good fun. They've got some great comedic actors that are in all three of the
yep.
movies and a bunch of crazy situations. I don't know if it's one of those things where you've got to be either that right place in your life or in that right mindset to
right.
fully enjoy a Harold and Kumar movie, but I think it's pretty good. It's on the list. Now here's one that is, and from the 773, added in that I don't know that it, is maybe a traditional holiday classic, but The Ref. Is in
with Dennis Leary, Kevin Spacey, and I believe is it Annette Bening? That's the third. Yeah, no, that movie is it kind of turns into like a chamber play. You know, like it's this guy who's going to rob them, and they're tied up, and it's set around Christmas, and It's funny. I mean, Leary gets to really grandstand and have a great time. And again, he's in good, as far as performance, caliber goes, he's in good company, but he gets to be him. He gets to do his thing. And usually when you get somebody in their element and you give them a good enough backdrop, they're gonna play. And The Ref is a movie that every year, and I remember when the trailer came out and I didn't see it until, quite a few years later. Every year somebody brings up The Ref as being one of their favorite Christmas movies. Every year. And I don't debate it. I'm just like, no, it takes place, that's like the whole time of year thing. The house, is decorated. It takes place in, this like time frame of this hostage situation that's just, goofy and out there. Get the right people in the room and you can be entertained for 90 minutes and The Ref does the job.
Some of them are one-offs like that, and some of them are some of your favorite characters in that Christmas setting, like the Mr. Magoo or Mickey Mouse or any of those things. And this is one that you brought up beforehand, and these guys are super. Yeah, I'm just wondering, like Fozzie Bear, who was Fozzie Bear in the Muppet Christmas Carol?
That's a good question. He was
judging by the outfits. There's a small picture here.
I haven't seen this edition.
Kermit the Frog he's got to be Scrooge, right? I'm guessing it looks like.
I believe Kermit is Bob Cratchit.
He's Bob Cratchit, right? Because there's a smaller frog on his shoulder that would be the Tiny Tim character.
The Tiny Tim character. Yeah, no, and Michael Caine is Scrooge. It's funny. I remember watching this movie many years ago and then loving it as a kid, and then I haven't seen it. So, like, who plays whom is I'm missing. I mean, I knew Kermit was Cratchit, and that was about it. Because, Michael Caine yelling at Kermit, and Kermit's, like, the nicest person on the planet. That's totally your Bob Cratchit. Muppet Christmas Carol is one I think that definitely is a lot of my friends, it's probably their favorite Christmas Carol adaptation, just because it hit them at a young age. It was a lot of their favorite characters.
Still the same basic story.
Yeah, and of course, the Muppets can, in my opinion, can't really do a lot of wrong, if any. The Muppets are just such a fun, wholesome, pure, well-intending, body of characters. And they can be anything. They can do anything. And so if you want to get a good message across, especially to young audiences, the Muppets, I think, are the best.
A couple of texts coming in for this, and you think about this. You want us to typecast, right? Some people get typecast as whatever, as an action hero or something, right? Or whatever kind of role that they would normally play, or even one of their characters, Ponch and John.
Yeah.
Eric Estrada, he's always going to be Ponch. It doesn't matter what he does on, Celebrity Rehab or whatever. But so Tim Allen is one of those guys. He's done a lot of things in the Home Improvement and TV Success, but he's one of those guys that maybe would be almost kind of typecast as Santa.
Yeah, and the Santa Claus was one of the big ones of my childhood. I remember seeing it in theaters. I remember going with my dad to see it. It's a movie I try to watch almost every year. I haven't watched it yet this year, but I know I'm going to, just because that movie, for whatever reason, I don't recall it being like the staple. Like, my dad remembers seeing it, but he doesn't. It's not one of his favorites by any means. I just think it was so cool to see the North Pole, the way the movie portrayed the North Pole. This big imaginative world where, all this magic happens. And then, you got this guy who's this just down to earth, like just this normal guy who needs a little Christmas spirit, becoming the true icon of Christmas for a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, he's it, and he's having to change throughout the whole movie. And then and that bit where he shaves,
he's like a hostile witness.
Yeah.
He's like, it's an involuntary Santa situation. Yeah.
And his whole thing where he shaves and then all the facial hair comes back like instantaneously. It's like they put a lot of creative, cute thought into making this work. And they had a talent that could play the hostile witness essentially and make it work.
It gets you into the mindset of Santa, because who would want to do that? Seems like a lot of work, right? You're working all year. You got to manage all these elves. You've got to fly around the world, and you look at all those different scenarios where you're constantly monitoring everyone. Yeah. Who's naughty? Who's nice? Who would want to do that? Well, I think they just approached it from the, well, it's not up to him.
Yeah.
He's just been.
No, it's a done deal. Like, the contract signed because he accidentally killed the other Santa, and now he's assuming the role. And from there, I do like how, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of this funny thing where he takes on this massive responsibility, right? He's got all this magic and everything, but they still let him, like, live at home. It's like he had a transition year where, like, he had to, you know, like, gain the weight and get the facial hair and then understand, like, your life is different now. This is who you are. And then after that, it's like, nah, he lives at the North Pole now. Like, that's just it. Like, but he had that transition year. So, you know, maybe it was a little rocky, right, but it ended up working out.
And they built that the kind of, you know, mental support side into it, yep. You know, let your transits kind of ease into being Santa. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get more into some of your favorite holiday movies. Some great texts are coming in from the 847. The Holiday is Sweet with Cameron Diaz and Jack Black's another suggestion.
Kate Winslet's also in that movie.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that and more with Blake Stubbs. Quick break here, 720 WGN. Wow. Merry Christmas. 720 WGN. It is Christmas Eve here. Hi, atop Chicagoland in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Dane here with you until 5 a.m. Riding Shotgun is Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We talk about some of the great holiday movies that you know, that you love. We've talked about some of the movies out there, the current ones that are out during the holiday time. And now we're kind of working through some of the biggest that have been recognized as some of the best ones of all time. And make sure, of course, coming up is the Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So in about 10 minutes, we're going to hear from Vic again about that. And so this is, I think, with holiday movies, and we've talked about, like, what is the criteria that makes it a holiday movie? The range is there. The years are there. This isn't something that's relatively new. You got White Christmas from 1954 is one that... Right.
That's a big one for me. I watch that every year.
That some people love. Bing Crosby is in it. You know, he's the guy that
Danny Kaye.
One of the voices. You know, that kind
absolutely. And the dancing, the singing, the you know, the big opulent dance numbers they're great. You know, I mean, it essentially was a really cool stage musical put on a big screen with a lot of money, and it did very well. Now it is a stage musical. You can see it everywhere, almost everywhere around the country.
It's undeniably holiday, undeniably Christmas in every single way. But some of these are a little bit obscure, like While You Were Sleeping, coming in at number 30. You've got a Bill Pullman. Where is he? Is Bill Pullman still alive?
Oh, yeah, he's still with us. Bill Paxton, yeah. We lost Bill Paxton, but Bill Pullman's still here.
And Sandra Bullock. And I remember this when he got knocked out and she became an opportunistic fiance of some kind, and in the end, somehow, even though
it all works out,
unlikely that they do fall in love. right
yep no and you're right.
Does that happen during, or is it just like through the process? Was he in a coma for quite a while?
It's definitely in the winter, but the Christmas is kind of like the linchpin, like, time of year that ties the whole message of, you know, let's not fight it, we're in love type, you know, thing. Yeah, developed throughout the movie and all that.
Let's
not fight it, we're in love.
Now, here, this, and I'm not sure where this must be some kind of a typo or a mistake, because, and we've talked a little bit about superhero movies and where they can be, and we decided that there probably wasn't a Christmas-related scene in Aquaman, but Batman Returns is listed as the number 28 best holiday movie of all time.
Yeah, it does take place around Christmas. There's a big tree lighting ceremony action sequence where I always try to draw people's attention, because a lot of people are like, you know, Batman doesn't kill. Batman throws puts a bomb in some dude's pants and throws him down a chute, and the bomb goes off. Batman kills someone in Batman Returns. Like, you can't miss it. Go back and watch it. It's there.
But he provides a debilitating injury.
Incredibly debilitating injury. But no, the Batman Returns does take place around Christmas, and so it falls into that Christmas category of films where I think it's definitely in the backdrop of the movie. But no, it is. It's around Christmas. And it actually starts with, you know, Oswald Cobblepot, you know, the Penguin, which would then go on to be masterfully played by Danny DeVito. It's one of my favorite Danny DeVito / villain roles in comic book movies ever. Yeah. But it starts at Christmas when the Penguin's born. So, I mean, it is. Christmas is interwoven within that film.
Is he born, or is he hatched?
He's born, but he's also chucked aside. He's orphaned very young. And actually the guy that plays his dad is Paul Reubens, Pee Wee Herman. So there you go. Nice little piece of trivia. If you haven't watched it in a while and you're like, wait, who played his dad? It's Pee Wee Herman.
Billy Bob Thornton also in that movie as well.
Yeah.
And then The Bishop's Wife is in here, and that was one that
was mentioned earlier.
From the 20th, 312-981-7200. You can add your thoughts Your favorite ones, your suggestions, maybe kind of weigh in on some of the ones that we've mentioned or some of those classics that you also appreciate. Or if you've got something a little, you know, less on the radar that you want to share with us, you can definitely do that as well. And on the line with us, we've got Linda from the Southeast Side. Linda, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I've been listening to the station, and everybody's talking about the favorite Christmas movies and that. And nobody has mentioned the movie All Mine to Give, which is supposed to be a true story of a young Scottish couple that come from Scotland to the U.S. to settle up in Wisconsin, the lumber company area. And they settle and they make their family and that. The father is ill. He gets ill with scarlet fever or something and passes away. And then not too far on, the mom gets sick. And they have around five or six children. And the town is talking about what to do with these kids. The mother tells the oldest boy, she says, each of your brothers and your sisters helps put them into families. Make the choice and make it good. So on Christmas Day, before the town is going to come and take these kids and separate them, the oldest boy takes each of his brothers and sisters. One family has girls, and he takes his one brother to that home, and he says that he'll do good there because they have no sons. His sister, one of his older sisters, he takes them to another place to help the families, that each child is put in a position where they will serve a family best or have a good life. And they show, towards the end, it's him with his baby sister. He's going through the snow, and that, and he takes her to this elderly lady's home, and she takes her and takes care of her because the lady has nobody. And then it shows him walking off into the snow, to the woods, going up to the lumber camp where he says he knows he can get a job. And that's kind of how it ends, that he goes to this lumber camp. It's supposed to be a true story. Glynis Johns plays the mother, and I can't think of the father right now. I don't know if it's Richard Green or who, but it was just on TV a couple of days ago again. But it's a very good movie.
Well, we'll look it up over the course of the over the course of the news break, and we'll have a little more recon on it. But right, you know what it is, Linda, is it's like, you know, you've got a negative situation, obviously a tragic situation, but people during the holiday time finding a best way to make the best of it, and maybe giving the gift of themselves, right, that are enriching all of these other families with their own presence, and so everybody kind of gets together and gets through it. I think it sounds pretty cool. We'll look it up and find those other co-stars, and we'll mention it, and we'll put it on our list, and appreciate you listening, Linda.
Okay, you take care and have a healthy, happy new year, and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yep, Merry Christmas, Linda. Thanks so much. So that's we'll get that during the news break, yeah. Some of the extra stuff.
I'm doing my homework.
Cameron Mitchell was the father.
Cameron Mitchell.
Thanks, Dan. Cameron Mitchell. Yeah, okay. So we've got that in there. When we come back from the news, we're getting into this list, and we'll see if that one is on there. We'll definitely mention it, but Elf is one that we're going to go. And
we'll talk Elf.
A bunch of people have mentioned it, and it is coming in at number 25. I think it should be a little bit higher just based on kind of the fact that it is one of those kind of beloved movies. I know in our house, everybody loves the Elf situation. It's one of those we'll definitely talk about. Also, Christmas Carol and Gremlins. Gremlins, I think, fits into the one. You know, you've got, you know, those monsters, but with Christmas as a backdrop, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll talk about that and much more when we come back. Number 20, WGN. Hi, atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline Studio on Christmas Eve. And I know what you're thinking, Blake. You're thinking more sleigh bell.
Yeah.
Or more cowbell, right?
More,
and who's behind more cowbell? It is Will Ferrell. And in one of his iconic roles as like the Don't Fear the Reaper cowbell banging guy with the ever shrinking shirt. That's one of the things that we know and love about him. But also, you got to think, and this is a guy that's in, you know, Daddy's Home 2 is also a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
right? And our family just loves those movies. There's just so many funny lines in them, and Will Ferrell front and center in that. And then, but I think he's got to be, you know, I don't say best known because he's done so many different things, and certainly
right.
comedy, right? I don't know that, has he made a serious movie yet? Has he stretched?
Yeah, Stranger Than Fiction was good. Was very good. I mean, it's funny, but he was funny in it. But it's not a comedy. It's a bigger movie than that. Yeah, yeah. It's got and there was a movie he made called, I think, Everything Must Go, and it was a more dramatic. Still, you get Will Ferrell. He's going to be funny at times, but there's more of a grounded performance from him in a couple. So yeah, he's done a couple films that you know have been in that grounded vein. But
even his comedy is. You know, it's not necessarily always a very highbrow comedy. Usually it's
right.
very lowbrow. And I don't think it goes any lower on the brow scale, but maybe high on the festive scale than in Elf. And this is one of those movies that, and we talked about it before we went to news, that we think is just, I think it is a staple. You have to watch that.
So Elf on this list, I think Elf is a true modern classic. Because I'll say that's high praise. That movie came out in 2003. I don't think I saw that movie until 2014. Okay, so and I don't know why.
Saving yourself.
I was saving myself. Yeah. No, I watched it at a Christmas party with a bunch of friends who, by the way, were like quoting it as it was happening, and I felt like I was. I mean, look, it didn't ruin it for me. It actually made me enjoy it more. And I think that teaming Will Ferrell with Jon Favreau. To make this movie happen. And Jon Favreau, we were talking about earlier when we mentioned Iron Man, Will Ferrell gets to really go off in this movie, but not in a bad way. It's all about this character, Buddy. And he really embodies it. He goes all in on it. He's surrounded by a lot of other great talent. You know, Zooey Deschanel is in there. Jimmy Caan is in there. Mary Steenburgen's in there. I'm a big fan of her work. So, yeah, I mean, you put people that I enjoy around Will Ferrell, I'm probably going to enjoy the thing Will Ferrell is in. The other thing is Peter Dinklage steals the movie. Oh. So... Yeah, I mean, and then it goes right back to Will Ferrell as soon as he's done, you know. So but this movie is one of the most quoted Christmas movies I know.
A little bit of a love story in there too.
Bit of a love story, yeah. And again, it tries to keep everything wholesome and enjoyable and pure, and it's also a fun movie to watch. That's the other thing. You can watch it with friends. You can watch it alone. You're going to have a good time. And I think that I was late to the party on this one. I love letting people know the truth. I was late to the party. But once I joined it, I was along for the ride. And I think Elf is probably a modern classic, definitely for Christmas films.
And I think it's one of those movies, too, right? Doesn't it give a little insight into – it pulls the curtain back, the veil, if you will, of the North Pole.
Yes.
Right?
Where I love that. I love getting to see the imagination behind creating – the world that Santa lives and operates in.
And Will Ferrell he's a taller than average person, right?
Right.
So which means he's an enormous elf.
An enormous elf, yes.
But somehow that doesn't even come to mind. He doesn't really get it until later on he realizes, right, that he's,
right.
he thinks he's just, you know, I don't know, whatever, he's got a pituitary situation. I'm not sure what, there's some glands or things like that. He's not really aware that he's adopted.
Yeah.
You know.
And then it's like nobody had the heart to tell him. And then finally when they tell him, it's like, oh, and, you know, but he's adjusted. I mean, he lives that life. He doesn't know anything else. He loves the life he leads. And then now he's got to go be part of the real world. And the culture shock is a bit much, but then he just embraces it and hits it head on with all that positivity. So I think that there's a lot of good Christmas spirit behind this film. And I love that it gets quoted a lot. And I was foolish to have waited as long as I did to see it for the first time.
Well, you were saving yourself. I think one of the common themes here is, and it's maybe a blending, because you've just got some general kind of slapstick holiday Santa Claus sure. type fun, but then you also, with James Caan, you know, you have sort of that kind of the warming and the, you know, kind of that transformational journey to like be right. more embracing of the holiday and the spirit and the people around you and that kind of thing. Because
he's a bit Scroogey in the movie.
Yeah, he's kind of Scroogey. Yeah.
And instead of getting three ghosts, he just gets one big happy bundle of elf, and that's cool. I mean, the movie's very charming, and it's very funny, and it's very pure in a lot of ways. And I think that modern classic is the phrase I keep coming up with when I talk about Elf, because I'm sorry, I don't know Christmas now without it, ever since I saw it for the first time.
Coming in at number 23 on the list. And this one, I don't know if it's a classic. It's hard to say. I know when it came out, it was a huge movie. So it was a huge, very successful movie. It was big and spawned, you know, not only, I think, probably a sequel, but certainly some toys and some other things.
Yeah.
Is Gremlins, and it fits along the lines of Christmas as a backdrop.
Yep.
And then it's, of course, you know, I guess the demonic domination. Of course, these are really kind of non-threatening. I mean, they are threatening, and they'll bite stuff, but these are
wild and crazy.
They're gremlins, right?
They are gremlins, yeah.
Kind of little monsters. They kind of come out of cute guinea pig characters.
Yeah, Mogwai. He's called a Mogwai.
I'm right.
Gizmo is a Mogwai. He is a sweet, wholesome, given as a pet for Christmas, but there's a lot of specific rules you have to follow. You can't feed him after midnight. You can't expose him to light. You can't get him wet.
Those rules are going to get broken. Anytime you build in, but just don't do this, whether it's Cinderella come back at midnight or whether it's, you know, don't feed it or get it wet.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole story, right?
And they're going to do that. And the whole thing, too, with Gizmo is that if any of these things happen, he will multiply. And it's a weird, kind of scary sequel. I mean, this is the thing. This movie kind of traipses into the horror realm. It's also a satirical film. It's got a lot going on. I mean, it's a Joe Dante film, so I'm going to enjoy it because I'm a big Joe Dante nut. But the thing with this movie is it says a lot more than just what's on the surface. And it's been talked about, you know, extensively about how this, you know, really, really targets, like, the overindulgence of consumerism and, like, all these other things. And it's clearly there. Once somebody points that out to you, if you don't see it right away, you can't unsee it. And yet the movie is still funny, and it's still a little scary. And it does take place at and around Christmas. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, it is a Christmas movie. But with a wild and crazy twist that doesn't really share with any of these other films we talked about maybe or maybe they're not a Christmas movie. This one, I call it a Christmas movie, but there's some caveats. If you want to argue it's not, I understand. I'm not going to be as staunch as my diehard my diehard opinion on the matter. But yeah, Gremlins is their list here says it's a minor classic. I would agree with that assessment. People who love it really love it, but it's not always on everyone's top 10.
And, you know, I always found it kind of difficult to kind of make sense of the fact that, so it isn't like the Hulk, right? You know, you got Bruce Banner or whatever, and then he turns into the Hulk, and they're still some kind of the same guy, you know, there's little elements. It seems as though these are, you know, Gizmo is never really saddled with the destructive tendencies of his gremlin counterpart.
Right.
You know, there seem to be like they're separate things. It's not like, you know, you can't slap the gremlin and be like, Gizmo, snap out of it. You know, it seems like he's gone.
Yeah. Right? No, when these things happen, when the multiplying occurs, it's out of control. Like, he can't stop it. He can't do anything about it. And, you know, you kind of get the sense that it hurts him. And there's all these other. So, like, people, when they watch this movie, they get sort of an emotional attachment to Gizmo because of how cute he is. And it's a little robot, a little puppet, a little animatronic, you know, character.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But he is. He's super cute. And again, you know, many years later, you know, Pokemon would become a big thing, still is a big thing. It's going to be a huge thing once the movie Detective Pikachu comes out. But so again, not that it's not a huge thing right now. New games have been released and whatnot. But Gizmo kind of falls into that category of being like a small little non-dog or cat character that has a personality and you know, is very cute and engaging. And then all of a sudden, like, all these bad, like, all the bad traits of someone's personality just form and manifest into these, like, other gremlin-like characters. It's like, wait a minute, how does that cute little thing spawn all these bad things? Like, I don't understand. But again, it's a movie, and it's fun, and it's a little scary. You know, it could scare little kids. I would say be careful if you have little ones who want to watch this, because while Gizmo is cute, his counterparts are not.
Yeah.
They're destructive. They're very destructive. But again, it's a satirical film that I think is very, very, very good. It's a classic to watch around this time.
It was, in my book. Yeah, it was a huge, huge hit. And so the next one, when we come back from this break, we're going to get into, and you know, we've had a couple people weigh in with this one, and this falls into the category of I guess Christmas is the backdrop. I don't know that I would consider it the 22nd best holiday or Christmas movie of all time, but Trading Places, which is, it's a very entertaining film.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy. We'll talk about that when we come back with Blake. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Hey, Bulls fans, enter for your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls night experience at ChicagoTribune.com/BullsQuiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. Dane here until 5 a.m. high atop Chicago in the Allstate Skyline studio. We've got in studio with us Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We break down some of the, I don't want to say some, it feels like we're breaking every single one of your favorite holiday hits down. And we have gotten a number of texts in, and you can add yours to 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. You can text in, you can call, and you can give it to Dan, and he'll definitely share it with us as well. Or you can come on the air and share your favorite holiday movie, the one that you don't miss, or maybe something a little bit under the radar that you think everyone would love to hear about. We've got a number of them for this, and it comes up as it is number 20 on the list of all times, and certainly a favorite for a bunch of listeners, is the 847 and a 312 and a 773. The favorite movie of all time is Barbara Stanwyck and Dennis Morgan in Christmas in Connecticut.
It's a classic.
From 1945.
Yeah.
Back when they made real movies.
Exactly. I was going to say, I think this was a good period of time for Barbara Stanwyck. She was kind of in the, she was almost at the height, maybe at the height of her career. I mean, she'd been in everything, I think. Noir films, but, you know, getting a holiday movie in there was really big. And this is one of those movies that I honestly have to admit I've never actually seen it in full. I know that my grandmother could probably quote it because I know it played on like TCM years ago and stuff, and that was one of those where I walked in and be like, what are you watching? Oh, Christmas in Connecticut. Oh yeah, I'm sure I'll see. I've never sat and watched that in its entirety, but great cast. I mean, you just look at that list and you're like, oh well, why haven't I seen it? So I see why it's somebody's absolute favorite.
Yep, it's number 20 on the list, and certainly a number of people like it. And so this, the one that we kind of teased a little bit before we went to the break, Trading Places, Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy, a bunch of other people, you know, star,
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she's in it as well. And it's the kind of thing, like, I had not, this was maybe a handful of days ago. My wife and I were talking about Eddie Murphy, like, well, what's he been in? And we're just like, well, 48 hours. Then of course all the, Beverly Hills Cop movies,
yep.
You know, there's like a handful of those. And then we were kind of stuck.
Nutty Professor, Trading Places.
You're Blake Stubbs, you're bringing him up. And so I had not, and then we ended up coming up with Trading Places down the road. But it wasn't something that came to mind first. Certainly he's a big star in it. And so the holiday part of it is the fact that I think it's, you know, was it a Christmas bonus thing? Was it just the end of the year? It just happened to be, I know there's Orange Juice Futures, and then it's a social experiment, right? Where the two old guys had decided to say, like, well, anybody, even, you know, this one, Dan Aykroyd's character, who is an executive in their firm, that if he took away everything, he'd be, you know, in the same kind of situation as the homeless guy.
Right.
Eddie Murphy. And then they just proceeded for their bet of $1. They ruined his life. And then Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd worked together to go ahead and get back and kind of rectify the situation. And I guess Christmas is the backdrop. Is that the...
Yeah. And the big thing, too, is I think it was a... I mean, watching Dan Aykroyd in that Santa outfit, you know, it's just... Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, their chemistry in this movie, like what they're able to pull off, even in the scenes when they're not together and what they do to push the movie forward, it's very funny. It ends up, you know, standing up on its own even now and being something that, every year somebody mentions Trading Places to me. Somebody mentions it when I talk Christmas movies.
Some of the elements on the costume side may have been the inspiration for Bad Santa because you see a little bit of that as well. So on the line with us, Stu, we have, and of course you can add your thoughts as well, 312-981-7200. Share your favorite holiday movie that you are enjoying this holiday season. Tom in Brookfield, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I've got one that's a little offbeat, Three Godfathers. It's a John Wayne movie. Did you ever hear of it?
I've never heard of it, no.
So, okay.
It's been remade about five times. It was made in the 40s. It's a John Ford Western. It's about three guys who rob a bank in Arizona, and they're going through the desert getting away, and they come upon a covered wagon with this lady having a baby. And she makes them swear that they'll take care of it. And it becomes this allegorical three wise men type thing.
Interesting.
Excuse me. And there's a town called Nazareth in it. And anyway, it's got a great corny ending, and it's just really a good holiday movie. I think it's kind of the precursor to Three Men and a Baby.
Oh,
because you have these three guys, these three rough guys, trying to take care of this little baby, and it's kind of funny at parts. But it's my favorite holiday movie. I just watched it last night.
All right, well, thanks, Don. We appreciate it. It's always cool to have opportunities to see John Wayne. You know, outside of the, you know, we're gonna go get him. Either way, it's a cowboy movie or a war.
Well, there's a lot of that in there, but it's a pretty sweet movie. It really is. It's got all the John Ford stock characters in there too.
So I was gonna say you had me at John Ford, sir. I'm a signer.
Yeah, I know. But if you ever get a chance to see it, they always play it on Turner Classic Movies a lot. But if it ever comes up, you ought to watch it. I think you might like it.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Okay. You too. Bye.
All right. And then we've got Joe in Chatham, and you have a movie that you want to share as well. Welcome to the show.
Merry Christmas to you both. I was just wondering on your list, because sometimes you mentioned some kind of obscure kind of Christmas theme movies. The cult James Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service takes place around Christmas time, and I was wondering if that was on the list also.
I did not see it on this list, but that's the Lazenby Bond film. So that's not Sean Connery, not Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton. This was the one-off George Lazenby, and it's not on this list, but I can definitely see the reason. I mean, yeah, the Christmas the backdrop elements to it.
Right. Probably the most famous sequence in the film is the ski chase.
Yes.
Where he escapes from Blofeld's fortress, and that occurs on Christmas Eve. And in fact, Blofeld at one point says to him, "Merry Christmas, 007.
Nice.
You know, and honestly, you know, when all this is said and done, I actually enjoy Lazenby's Bond, even though it's a one-off. I mean, I've seen almost every Bond film.
Well, you know, for many years, until perhaps Skyfall, there was a large segment of Bond fans, and I'm among them, who felt that On Her Majesty's Secret Service was the best film in the series.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I've had many conversations with people in your line of thinking, and I don't disagree with you that they're... Well, either way, there's a lot of, I think, lack of respect for the one-off performance of Lazenby. Now, the film itself is good. I think that Skyfall and everything, like you said, you know, that really, Casino Royale, Skyfall, those kind of changed the game and how we see Bond now. But the way he, you know, was portrayed, like, you know, Lazenby was like a model. You know, he wasn't exactly this super well-known actor, and he just kind of stepped in and really brought something different. And I think audiences over time have grown to appreciate it more, which I'm happy about.
In retrospect, I think audiences have given it a second look. Especially if you love the Ian Fleming books, it is one of the best adaptations of any of Fleming's books.
Right. Yes, that is the one thing I know. It's inarguable that is one of the best adaptations.
Well, Joe, thanks for weighing in and sharing that. You know, you get a little bit of things, and I think it shows kind of the range of the holiday movies, right? Where you can have, you know, action movies, you can have fun movies, comedy movies, you can have dramas, you can have a James Bond movie. So, Merry Christmas, Joe, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to both of you.
Yep. Merry Christmas.
All right. So there we go.
Yeah,
it's a little bit different. The James Bond.
Absolutely.
You don't necessarily think of the James Bond movie.
No, not at all. And the other thing, too, is to pull the Lazenby Bond. I love that. I'm glad. That's the one, again, people are starting to appreciate it more now than I think they ever have. So because for a lot of people, Sean Connery is always going to be James Bond. You know, Roger Moore was the first Bond I ever saw when I was younger. And then, of course, Daniel Craig, you know, Pierce Brosnan, et cetera. But people like to forget about Lazenby, and I don't understand why.
He just didn't have as good of a... you know, PR firm.
Needed a better publicist,
right,
I guess.
The big Lazenby lobby just wasn't in motion there. And you can't think of a, I don't think, a different contrast or anything that is more contrasting than maybe a James Bond type movie where there's going to be, you know, intrigue and death and a lot of spy stuff. And then you get into our number 16 movie on the list, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, with the stop motion kind of, they're not quite claymation guys, right? These were,
they were puppets. They were animated stop motion puppets. And the thing with this is, you know, we kind of touched on Yukon Cornelius and the Bumble earlier, but, This was one of the Burl Ives, you know, as the snowman, the singing snowman. This is the thing where, you know, we were talking about earlier how we don't enjoy Frosty the Snowman. It didn't age well. This one still has some good songs built into it that I think, you know, thanks to those pipes of Burl Ives, they stand the test of time. But the other thing is the stop motion animation, what a process that is. You know, I mean, these were like, what, I think like 40-minute short films. They did a series of these, and Rudolph is probably the most popular one. I think it goes without saying. So I can see why it's so high on the list. It is a wonderfully animated shortish film that usually is doled out over an hour on broadcast TV.
A lot of fun. A lot of your big Christmas stars are in there. You know, you got Rudolph is there, obviously. Yep. You got the Bumbles, Yukon Cornelius, Santa, the big guy.
Santa, the big guy's right? in there.
He's in it. Yeah. And then it explores not just the holiday theme of Christmas, but also the elfin career path where the one little guy wanted to be a dentist. And so, you know, he had to come
so,
to...
I just love the obscurity of, I want to be a dentist. And they all look at him like he... No, you're going to make toys. It's like, don't you guys need it? Like, this is the most logical thing you could have with all the candy and cookies and all this other stuff you guys are eating.
Well, right, so, exactly. You need an in-house dentist. And eventually, I want to spoiler alert this one back from 1964, but I think that it all works out, you know, in the end for everybody, including the Misfit Toys.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a break. When we come back, we've got more on the list. We are getting towards that top 10 as we are getting towards It's Christmas Eve. Right here on 720 WGN. Haunting, right?
Mm-hmm.
720 WGN here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 5 a.m. in for Nick DiGilio and Blockbuster. Blake Stubbs riding shotgun. And that was a request, right? Was it Manhattan Steamroller or something?
No, that's Lindsay Sterling. She's a violinist who also dances while she plays the violin.
What?
You can look her up. She's very big on YouTube. She's one of the early huge YouTube successes. She did America's Got Talent in the early days of America's Got Talent. And then she went off and did her own thing. And this last year, she put out a Christmas album called Warmer in the Winter. And she just completed, I think, her second Christmas tour. She tours with that album. And I actually saw her a couple weeks ago. I was like fourth row. It was incredible. And it put me really in Christmas spirit. And I thought, hey, Dan, you think you could find some? And of course he grabbed it. Yeah, he knew exactly what to find.
Yeah, Dan.
So thank you, Dan.
No problem.
I appreciate it.
And if that was Mannheim Steamroller, there'd be about 200% more synthesizer.
Yes.
I just realized, sometimes, you know, we only get to hear just a small portion.
Right.
A sample size, if you will. I can name that tune in five notes kind of thing. You know,
yes.
We don't get to hear the whole thing, so I didn't know if it was going to... Yeah, I'm just joking.
No, Lindsey Sterling's one of my favorites, so I was glad I could sneak in a request there.
312-981-7200. You can request yours as well, plus add in and share your thoughts on your favorite holiday movie. So many, man. We've had so many and so many great ones from the listeners coming in, and a lot of obscure ones, too, that aren't necessarily ones that you'd think of all the time. This is one that I think falls into at least kind of the team photo of like the Frosty the Snowman, which has been around forever, but it's maybe held the test of time. Maybe it's just more of a, I think it's like a, you know, animated franchise, and people have sort of this, I think, longstanding appreciation for the Charlie Brown series of things, whether it's Thanksgiving or Halloween or Christmas or whatever. The Charlie Brown Christmas coming in that top 15 role. Have you seen it recently?
I mean, I've seen it, and I've seen the segments of it that get carved out, you know, as like the, here's the true meaning of Christmas, and it's Linus giving the monologue. I gotta say, Charlie Brown Christmas is one of those, I think it's one of the best. as far as things one can watch to get what the meaning of Christmas is, and a good message about, you know, finding your friends and family and being together and learning to appreciate things and not, you know, get lost in materialism and all these other, you know, problems that arise around this time of year. Because in the end, you get a kid, a little kid, giving a brass tacks breakdown of the story of Christmas. And it's actually still emotional and it's impacting. And the whole bit with the tree. Yes, of course, I have the little tree with the one ornament
little
and everything.
Tree.
Cause they sold those. And of course, I bought one cause I thought it was awesome. And, I think that there's a lot to be said for, you know, Charles Schulz and company. This thing came out in what, 65? I'm looking at the list. And, I think this one still holds up. I think this is, of all the things on this list, this is the one that if I had kids today, they would be watching this. If it's on, I would gladly watch it. I think that this one definitely still sticks. So, yeah, Charlie Brown Christmas, big, big positive vibes from me.
As we get towards the, that number one movie of all time, and I'm sure we'll have, you know, some arguments maybe or some disagreements on whether things should be in there. A lot of these are ones that people have thought of and appreciated.
Yeah.
The Edward Scissorhands is one in there. I don't know that we need to talk a bunch about that because what I remember of is, as I remember, sort of a, it looked like maybe a California suburb kind of thing where he's cutting, you know,
Bushes.
Yeah, the topiary.
Sculpting the bushes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being super Christmassy. I remember it being a guy that, you know, sort of fish out of water different. He's got these metal hands and then some problems at school.
That kind of thing. Yeah, there's this is a Tim Burton film. So it has a very set visual aesthetic. You know, it's got a very good visual style to it. Vincent Price is in this movie. He I think it's one of his later performance, final performances, and he's excellent in it. And of course, young Johnny Depp is the title character. Winona Ryder, sort of at the height of her popularity.
That may have been where they met, you know, because they were an item.
Yeah, they were an item. And the other thing is, this movie does have Christmas in it. In fact, it ends around Christmas with snow and all this.
Right.
So it has some very long-standing, and I believe, you know, there's like a years later element to it where Winona's character is much older, and it's like at Christmas she's reflecting on what had happened. So, yeah, I would file it in the Christmas category due to setting, but also kind of the importance of the relationships of the characters. And it is. It's a bit of a dark film with some lightness in there, too. And it's people who list this as a Christmas movie know that I definitely agree with you.
Well, when it comes to like dark films with a bit of lightness in it, and you can have that backdrop of Christmas when you have war, right? I mean, there's your darkness right there, and the lightness of maybe how people can come together during the holidays in a situation like that. We've got Paxton on the line. Paxton, welcome to WGN.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I just wanted to mention the original film adaptation of All Quiet on the Western Front, where on Christmas Eve, the German soldiers and the French soldiers come out of their trenches and they exchange what little gifts they have, like a little bit of wine.
Right.
That was a touching moment.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, it's one of those kind of things where you're building in sort of that higher purpose of the holidays into a situation that was, you know, tragic and negative in a bunch of different ways for millions of people, right? And to say that, hey, they decided to recognize it's the power of, I think, the season. So thanks, Paxton. I appreciate you.
Yeah, well put. And if you could sneak in I Believe in Father Christmas by Emerson, Lake and Palmer, if you have time.
Yep, we'll definitely. We can request it. All right, thanks, man. Merry Christmas.
All right, thanks, guys.
You bet. All right, so okay.
That's a good pull. It's a great scene. I mean, it's the idea of, you know, something bigger than just mortal men and this, you know, this thing that they're engaged in.
That's part of history where they spent literally years killing each other and fighting over, you know, a few feet here and there, and to be able to take, I think there's a story too where they showed they took the Christmas off.
Yeah.
And they went and like had, I don't want to say a party, but they got together, exchanged, as he had mentioned, some gifts and, you know, had a couple drinks, and we're like, well, let's take a day off.
We'll go back to killing each other tomorrow.
Exactly.
Which is really bleak.
100%.
But that's, you know, it was a whole thing of, and I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, like soldiers, you know, in those wars, they had shared faith. You know, they came from the same religious backgrounds or similar religious backgrounds. And so, you know, to them, it was a sacred day, and they chose not to engage in violence. And there's something special there that I think, you know, the historical context of it and everything that was going on in the world, and we're taking a day off and we're just not going to do this. It's impacting, you know, it's something that if you're watching it, you feel it. You definitely can connect with the human spirit there.
Wow, getting deep here. 312-981-7200. Some great additions here that aren't necessarily in your normal big poster, your team photo of Hollywood movies that you got to see, but certainly some that deserve a view. This one is, you know, sitting here at 13, I think it's got to be in the top five as far as favorites.
Yeah.
And maybe favorites even.
Or certainly watched.
I don't know.
For
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. I don't know how you're going to, as far as the criteria of like what makes it either good or better or more, you know, popular or more successful or whatever. But A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as.
Here's the thing.
It's like the movie.
I think if you grew up in the Midwest, this movie still holds pretty thick, pretty heavy. It's got a good. It stands the test of time, whatever, you know, phrase you want to use. It's a family movie. It's funny. It definitely takes place around this time leading up to, and of course, the day of Christmas. It's got quotable lines, quotable characters, just in general. The you know, how many people do you know actually own the leg lamp? You know, I know someone in my family that does, and it's awesome.
The leg lamp has gotten to be so famous that even a spinoff of the leg lamp, there's a Star Wars spinoff of the leg lamp where it's C-3PO's leg with the dome top of R2-D2 over the top.
Now, I have not seen this. And I'm a huge Star Wars nut. This is a bit out there for me. I'm not going to lie. I try to keep my love of Star Wars to the films, not so much all of the toys and everything else. But no, that like this movie is a staple in popular culture, especially, you know, Christmas popular culture. And I think because it's about a family that lives in Indiana, you know, they resonate with us here in the Midwest a lot more than they might if you're on the West Coast. You know, like, I don't remember. I mean, I spent a Christmas in California. I don't remember anybody talking about A Christmas Story. It was not a big thing. Christmas Vacation got mentioned, but not like the movies we're talking about as like the top five, the big ones, the ones that are huge for us. This is a movie that I think still sticks here. I don't know that it sticks everywhere else.
Okay, so I had not even considered that maybe without the impending doom or danger of sticking your tongue on a frozen flagpole,
right,
if this is just not possible in California, then maybe you don't necessarily feel it the same way. I think this movie has just about everything. It's got your coming of age, you know, it's got your kind of coming to terms with, you know, gifts, whether you're going to get them or not. And they build in a lot of the crazy hijinks on the family side.
They do,
you know.
Indeed.
Only you didn't say fudge. There's just a bunch of everything in there. And then you've got your, you know, dealing with the crazy bullies. You've got, you know,
furnace fighting. Don't forget the furnace fighting.
Furnace and the dog next door.
Yep.
And
the Bumpus hounds.
I mean, it's got everything, and so many quotable lines. You know, they're all running through my mind at this. And I just think it's one of those.
It's a classic. Yeah, I mean, it's an easy classic. I mean, and the thing is, when you look at some of these other films we've talked about, you know, ones from like the 40s and the we've had a couple in the 30s, you know, things like that. You know, this movie came out in 83. It came out in 83. It's not that old of a film when you think about it. I mean, yeah, it's got some age on it, but, you know, aside from, you know, like and here's the thing. We mentioned Elf earlier. Peter Billingsley, who plays Ralphie, is in Elf. He's actually in Elf. You should look that up when we're on break. Like, and people out there listening, they're like, I knew Peter Billingsley was in it. Of course, because there's a meme going around the internet that's like reminding you that Ralphie grew up to be an elf. But yeah, I think it's a big part of Christmas for everybody.
312-981-7200. You can add yours as well. So many on the tech side, we'll get to as many as we can, and your phone calls, if you are on hold, definitely stay there as well. We've got the one that you had mentioned, Arthur Christmas, and this is the animated one, not the inebriated Dudley Moore version, which I am a huge fan of. That came in at number 12, Arthur Christmas.
92% rating. That's a pretty good indicator that it's decent. I was going to throw that out there. No, that's a good Aardman Christmas movie. It's got a lot of heart. some seriously good storytelling. I enjoyed it.
312-981-7200. And before we go to break, we'll get Paula in here really quick from Chicago. Paula, welcome to WGN.
Merry Christmas. Thank you. I'm calling for Stalag 17. I saw it as a maybe 10-year-old. And many, many years later, I'll watch it anytime it comes on TV. William Holden, directed by Billy Wilder. It's set in a prisoner of war camp. And they have to make do with the celebrations as they can create them. And it was a wonderful movie, and I just love that one.
All right. Well, thanks for the recommendation. I think that's and thank you, Paula. Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
All right. So, here, I mean, when you can have, you take like the most stressful situations possible, yep. and you still find time to enjoy and celebrate, I think it's very cool when they set it in some of those settings with the whether you're on the Western Front or whether you're in a prisoner of war camp and all those. And so thank you, Paula. These aren't the ones that you necessarily think of right off the bat, but it's great to have them added to our list. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have more. We're going to get a little deeper in this list with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. It's Dane here on 720 WGN.
I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir. The peal of a bell on that Christmas tree smell.
Nice little tinsel and 720 WGN live here on Christmas Eve. High atop Chicagoland in the Allstate Skyline studio. Dane here with you until 5 o'clock. Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in studio riding shotgun with us. Want to remind people that coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. And right after that, right after the 5 o'clock hour, we've got the opening bell, Mark Carmen, sitting in. So stay tuned for that. And on the line with us, we do have Diane from Indiana. Diane, welcome to WGN.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for making it. So what you got?
Yeah, I just started listening. I apologize. I just woke up and said, oh, yeah, talking about Christmas movies. Well, I've got two that are oldies but goodies. And the first one is probably my favorite, and it's called The Cheaters. And I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I am not. No.
Give a little bit of a snippet out there.
Oh, yeah. You should look it up. It's really, really hard to find. I don't think it's even available to buy because we always look for it, and it's really hard to find. We got it on tape from years ago. But it's about a family that, a rich family, that tries to cheat this lady out of her inheritance. And so they don't want her to see it in the newspaper, so they take her out to their cabin far away from everything, and they get to feel really bad. Of course, it's Christmas time, and they end up having a real old-fashioned Christmas out there in the cabin, making, you know, popcorn ornaments and things and having a fire and going out and chopping wood and stuff. No TVs, anything like that. And they end up telling her about her inheritance and, you know, it's a really wonderful movie.
So
and of course, at Christmas time.
So they go out. They have a wonderful Christmas, and they with their hostage, right? So it's a hostage situation.
Yes, exactly. They kind of kidnap her,
but so not like a violent.
She doesn't
one.
Hear no, no. about Good her answer. Inheritance, but and, yeah, look it up. It's a great movie, okay. Absolutely great.
And then you've got
and
one
the other one I was thinking of is The Lemon Drop Kid with Bob Hope.
We mentioned that one earlier. Yeah, with Jack Lemmon.
Oh, you did mention it?
Yeah.
It's a great movie, and that song Silver Bells was written for that movie.
Wow. Okay, well, see, you just woke up, obviously, and so you weren't aware that we did mention it, but that has been one that a lot of people thought was great. So you're in some pretty decent company, Diane, here on Christmas.
Yeah, you never see those movies anymore, and I don't know why.
Well, we're going to see them now. You've inspired people to go out and check them out. So thanks for calling. Merry Christmas, Diane.
All right. Thank you very much. Happy Christmas. Bye now.
I'm familiar with the Cheaters television show.
Yeah, you know, I am too. very big difference from what I just read about.
Sort of a reality hidden camera show where they follow people around and then ambush them. I don't know if there's been a Christmas backdrop for that, but maybe. You never know.
I'm sure there was a Christmas episode. I mean, why? I mean, that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, why
there
wouldn't
wasn't.
There be? So here, we're going to run through some of these quick. We got number 11, Die Hard.
Of course.
Is the one that is kind of the poster child for movies that are either not really Christmas movies or it is a Christmas movie, even though there's a lot of blowing up that happens. And then the Grinch Stole Christmas, it comes in at number 9.
Yeah, the original, the animated original.
Dan had played one of the songs, one of those famous kind of iconic songs. You're the mean one, that guy.
Very good. I mean, and it is. It's a classic. It's a must-watch, I think, every year for me as well.
Babes in Toyland. This may be as far back in the Wayback Machine as we go, 1934.
Yeah, that's that's an older one, an older gem.
Highly rated, 100%. And then coming up at number 6, we've got The Nightmare Before Christmas. I could never figure out whether this is it's a Christmas movie, it's a Halloween movie.
It's a both movie. It really is. It's a both movie. I think the spirit of Christmas is very present. I think the very cool visuals of Halloween and the embracing of what Halloween, the fun of Halloween is there. So I think it's safe to say it's both, honestly. With great music, by the way.
Excellent music. Danny Elfman does a lot of that stuff. And along the same lines as, in sort of a way, of Tim Allen in the Santa movies, where you have a hostile witness ambassador for a holiday, is where Jack Skellington, he's grown weary of being the Pumpkin King and thinks he wants to try something new.
Wants to try his hat at a new new endeavor.
And then you're looking at, I'm not sure, are you familiar with this in number 5? It's called The Shop Around the Corner.
I am familiar with this. I've had a couple people reference this movie this year, you know, leading up to the holiday season. And it's one of those movies that I think, I don't think this movie gets enough play. I know that it's played on like Turner Classic Movies, so if you're looking for a chance to see it, I think it's been played once in a while, at least in the last couple of years. But I don't know that it's one that gets as much play as, say, a Christmas Story or anything like that. So, but The Shop Around the Corner is a very good Christmas movie. But it's one of those that it doesn't get as much play as some of its other contemporaries.
We're shining the
we
light.
We want to point you in that direction. Yeah.
Like, go get it.
Yep.
We just threw it out there into the snowdrift and letting people know to go out there, head out, and get it. Holiday Inn, 100% again rated, and this is
classic.
Number 4.
Very big classic. I mean, this is Fred Astaire. This is Bing Crosby. This is, you know, the dancing, the singing, the whole thing. Yeah, the Holiday Inn is I think it's a staple. I think it's an absolute staple.
We got Irving Berlin in there, too. It's a classic, right?
Yep. You can't. Yep.
And then this is one. So Carla Mari and Lisa Wolf, they do a lot of the radio plays that we have here on Sunday nights. And they had just done Miracle on 34th Street tonight. And it comes up as the thing that they had just featured on their most recent show and the number 3 movie of all time. And this is it's a great one, right? This is this one really does hold up. I mean, we saw this as a family a couple years ago, and it was still just as good.
Yeah, this is one of those where, I mean, this has been remade, I think, a couple of times, but I don't think it captures the same genuine magic that the original does. And I know that it gets referenced in a lot of movies. There's even a sequence, I think, where it's referenced in Christmas Vacation. It's another one of those big holiday movies that, you know, it probably gets its play on TV, you know, if you want to catch it, but I know you can get this on like a streaming platform and watch it, you know, in all of its original glory.
Number 2, Meet Me in St. Louis. It looks like
Judy Garland. Yeah, Vincent Minnelli. And they ended up getting married later, and
you know it's right,
and they're the parents of Liza Minnelli. Wow. So yeah, Meet Me in St. Louis. When actually, I watched that for the first time in film class when I was in college, in one of my film classes, and it is a vibrant, cool Christmas movie that, you know, I mean, I would say it holds up pretty well. It's one of the classics.
Blake Stubbs going deep there did a little bit of a kind of a holiday movie 23andMe there, saying who's related to who and who came out of it. Now the number 1 movie in agreement with so many people that have called in or texted in is Robert from Bartlett, 708 area code. My favorite movie is A Wonderful Life. He has a question, and hopefully you will know this, Blake.
Hopefully.
I heard it was bought by a network TV, which is why it never airs on commercial free channel or available to buy on DVD. Is this true? You know, because it's the kind of movie that used to be on all the time, looping. I think that's part of the reason it was so successful. If you'll remember, when it was first released, it wasn't a hit at all, right? It's just kind of over time grown on.
It became something much bigger than just its initial release. As far as the ownership rights of it, that might have shifted in recent years, and so you don't get it like you used to, is the easiest way to say it. I mean, I know that I will have no problem tracking it down, you know, on Christmas Day if I want to watch it, or even this evening, now that I think about it, because I came into the station when it was still yesterday. So I'm here, you know, now I'm like, oh, Christmas Eve, like when I get home, I'm going to visit with my parents and probably sit and watch It's a Wonderful Life tonight.
Yep.
But I do know that, you know, a lot of these things, while I don't have a specific answer to your question, I can say that usually these agreements, the rights and the broadcast rights of something are bought for X number of years, and then maybe it'll be re-upped or maybe it'll be shopped out elsewhere. So wherever you find it tonight, that's who just has it for now. Because I remember when I was younger, it was on a 24-hour rotation on, I think it was NBC or ABC, but then you'd have like Christmas Story running 24/7 on TNT. You know, like that was the go-to station to find that. But now things might have changed. Yeah. So,
and now with the internet, you can see almost everything all the time. Every single thing you've ever seen on television is pretty much on demand. And so we went through so many movies, some current ones out there in the holly, and certainly all those favorites from all time. And so, Blake, thank you so much for sitting in
Absolutely.
And kind of breaking down the world of holiday movies, and give out your Twitter and ways people can continue that conversation with you.
Sure. Easiest way to get me is on Twitter at Blake Stubbs, BlakeStubbs. But yeah, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Love talking movies. Let's keep it going.
You'll hear him a little bit later on today as well. Thanks to everybody who listened to the show and everybody who participated. And stay tuned for the opening bell with Mark Harmon.